is Free Talk Live, and you can dial toll-free to join us here on the radio. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. And joining you in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Will.
You can, of course, bring up anything that you want. We're live throughout all of these holidays, including New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, so be sure you stay tuned to more of Free Talk Live as the days go on here. The toll-free number, again, if you want to join us, 855-450-FREE like freedom. And Skype username is lrn.fm. Bitcoin has come back, the comeback kid. It had dropped down as low as around $11,000 over the last week or so, and now back up to it around 16,000 today.
Yeah, but I also saw a post by Jeff Berwick, one of the organizers of
Anarchapulco.
Anarchapulco, and he was trying to send a Bitcoin today.
Oh my
with
God,
a
yeah,
mycelium wallet.
Yep.
And let's see here.
It was over $1,000 fee.
Yeah, it was like an $1,100 fee for a single
That's
transaction.
Insane.
And I'm sorry. I have a friend of mine who responded. I actually shared that post.
Yep.
I've been advising, you know, Muslims all over the world on cryptocurrency for like 7 or 8 years now. Mm-hmm. And one of those brothers who have taken my advice and invested in cryptocurrencies took my other piece of advice, and his response was, this is the reason why my current cryptocurrency portfolio consists of 0.1% of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I can't blame anybody for not wanting to get into Bitcoin. It's hard to get out of.
Let's see here. Oh, let's see.
These days.
1,000. Oh, good Lord. I am trying to send one Bitcoin. The economic or low priority fee is $1,779. A priority fee of $1,904 to send one $15,000 Bitcoin. That's more than 10%.
It's terrible.
It's 12%.
Now, that transaction does have a lot of what they call inputs. It has like 89 or something. I can't see it from here, but you can see it at the very
bottom.
Yeah,
89 in, 2 out.
So the more inputs there are, the more expensive the transaction is because of the amount of data that it takes to be able to transmit that to the network. But it's still, it's insane.
What causes that? The inputs.
It's just kind of the way Bitcoin works. I don't know. I'm not an engineer, so I don't know why the system was designed the way that it was. But basically, the way Bitcoin is stored is in these sort of clumps, which mm-hmm. are basically the inputs. And I don't exactly understand how all that functions.
Well, because I've got a friend here who says, he's like, you know what? I always use a transaction fee. I use a Coinomi wallet. Mm-hmm. I use a transaction fee of about $2, no matter how big of a or small of a transaction I send.
Yeah.
And I still have transaction times of around 2 hours.
I mean, it's just amazing to me. I had four transactions sitting out there for 3 weeks using the official Bitcoin Core wallet.
Okay, and?
And they got stuck for 3 weeks until I finally abandoned the transaction because apparently you can do that now with Bitcoin. You never used to be able to do that before, which is, I mean, it's great when the Bitcoin system doesn't work and you can just abandon a transaction. That's good considering the circumstances now. But the old idea behind Bitcoin was that once you hit send, it was irreversible.
Yeah.
That it was going to go through no matter what. And the fact that you can now reverse a transaction is a very bad thing for merchants. So any merchant that is accepting Bitcoin these days needs to know if the person knows what they're doing and they're using the official wallet, because you don't get the reversal thing or the abandoned transaction option in most of the Bitcoin wallets. But if they're sitting at home and you send to them an invoice and you say, I need you to pay this invoice and they're going to pay it with Bitcoin, and they hit send, you'll see it as though it's being paid. And if you let that product go at that point, that person can then hit abandon and they get the Bitcoin back before it. If they hit abandon before it confirms, then they get their Bitcoin back. So if you're doing Bitcoin, if you're doing sales of anything at all and you're still selling for Bitcoin, which most people won't these days because their customers don't want to spend it. But if for whatever reason you are.
It takes forever to get confirmations. Like when I was doing business with Newegg. And this was just before everything got super, super high and super, super bad. I had four transactions time out before the first confirmation. So you couldn't, and they have like a 40-minute wait time where their system will wait for 40 minutes for the first confirmation. Mm-hmm. I had four different transactions that timed out. I mean, you were around for that. You saw me. I was losing my mind because my Bitcoin literally just disappeared and went to Coinbase. But that transactions just vanished.
People don't want that kind of experience when they're
that's
when
why
they're
I don't use
things.
It.
So anyway, that's
give me some Dash, man.
That's
give
why my recommendation is if you're a merchant and you're still accepting Bitcoin Core, aka BTC, you need to be very, very careful and make sure you don't ship a product until you get at least one confirmation, because otherwise that person can just revoke it. And that's that was never the way Bitcoin was intended, but that's how it is now. And
there's a lot of things about Bitcoin that are now that are not what was intended. You know, that's another reason why I support a lot of these smaller currencies. And people are like, "Oh, you know, what's your crap coin this week?" No, a lot of these currencies, I support them because they've got new technology, new ideas, or they support the philosophy that I feel was originally behind cryptocurrencies of anonymity and secrecy and decentralization, getting the hands out of central planners. You know, and I support coins that are pushing those ideas.
So I've got a story here related to Bitcoin from Huffington Post entitled "The Bitcoin Hoax" by Robert Kuttner, the co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect, whatever that is. He writes, "Imagine an unholy alliance between cyber utopians, money launderers, financial fraudsters, and ultra free marketeers. What sort of toxic contraption might they dream up? That would be Bitcoin. Remind me, what is the problem for which Bitcoin is a supposed solution? More on that in a moment." I can remind you of that, bud. The problem that Bitcoin was the solution for until they broke it. Luckily, though, there's all these competitors now that basically do what the original Bitcoin did and do it better. But the original problem that it was solving was centralized fiat currency. That is a problem. Fiat currency is a huge problem to those of us who value freedom, to those of us who understand money and economics. Fiat currency, the government currencies of the world, and we can talk about Venezuela's coming up here. We got news about what's going on down there. But fiat currency is just a study in failures. It's a study in, at least as far as our perspective, as far as the consumers, as far as the individual in any given country, you lose. I mean, every time you use fiat currency, you're a loser.
It's centrally controlled and centrally manipulated fiat currency, because Bitcoin was, and the altcoins do great. Bitcoin used to do great, and what happened? It gained central control. Now you have all these developers who have changed the software and got in there and made things so that they could personally profit off of it. They became the new Federal Reserve. The Bitcoin developers of today, the people who work with, who changed, basically the people who kicked Gavin out, right?
That was one of the programmers who was handed the keys to the kingdom by Satoshi Nakamoto. Basically.
All right. So when they kick him out and they changed everything, they introduced like a centralized planner group to Bitcoin. And now what's happened? It's become no different than the banks before and no different than fiat currencies before. It's being centrally manipulated, fees, bloated prices. I think $15,000 Bitcoin, when you compare it to everything else on the market, is overpriced. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it's being centrally manipulated by people who have personal wealth that they want to grow.
It's not exactly. I mean, you're comparing apples to oranges. It's not the same as a government currency because they can't force people to accept it. And even though the programmers can write code, the code doesn't have to be accepted by the miners. So it's not a centrally controlled.
They figured out a way to get the miners to fall in line with what they want, and it's money.
Well,
$30 transaction fees. That's how you get the miners on board with you breaking. They broke Bitcoin. How do you get the miners on board
with
breaking Bitcoin?
But the people don't have to use it.
Exactly.
And the reason why it's so priced the way it is, as you said, over 15 grand per Bitcoin, pushing 16 grand. Is, I think, because of its legacy, because it has the name recognition, because people, when they want to get into cryptocurrency, Bitcoin's the first thing they think about until they find out that it's broken and you can't send without spending at least $30 these days. It's crazy. There's more coming up on Free Talk Live. Yeah! Free Talk Live. You can dial in toll free here and bring up whatever is on your mind. Our number is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, so feel free to Skype on in here at Skype username lrn.fm. And don't forget, you can join Free Talk Live in real life at Anarchapulco coming up in about 2 months, February 15th through the 18th. It's happening at the beautiful Princess Resort in Acapulco, Mexico. Ron Paul just announced as the keynote speaker for Anarchapulco. It was a great event in 2017. I really enjoyed it. It was my first time attending. There were hundreds of people there who care about freedom. And some great speakers coming up in 2018, including G. Edward Griffin, as I mentioned, Ron Paul, Jeffrey Tucker, Roger Ver, Larkin Rose, Jeff Berwick, Bruce Fenton, Brett Vinat, Julia Taransky, Dana Martin, Juan Galt, Adam Kokesh, Kerry Wedler, Vit Yedlaika, and Sterling Lujan, and more. You can go to anarchapulco.com, use code FTL, like Free Talk Live, and that'll get you 10% off the regular ticket price. Once again, code FTL over at anarchapulco.com. It's February 15th through the 18th. And we'll be there, plus live music from Jordan Page, Backwards, Rob Hustle, and more. It's a great libertarian, anarchist, voluntarist networking event, big party. I mean, it's just a great time, lots of great speakers. You really don't want to miss this if you can afford to get down there. Getting down there is probably going to be the most expensive part. The actual hotel costs are pretty affordable, considering like the quality of the hotel that you're going to be staying in. This is like a, I don't know how many stars it gets, but it's probably like 5-star would be my guess. This is a very, very nice location. Check it out over at anarchapulco.com. Johnson joining Ian and Will in the studio.
Hey, hey.
Hey, good evening. We're talking about the Huffington Post hit piece against Bitcoin written by Robert Kuttner. He says that the Bitcoin is a hoax. And he said,
I guess it's a pyramid scheme and it's dead. It's already dead.
There's actually another article called Bitcoin is a Ponzi Scheme over at thehill.com. So that we've got that one too. But we'll get into why this guy says Bitcoin is a hoax here in moments. He had said, remind me, what is the problem for which Bitcoin is a supposed solution? And we were going ahead and reminding him, not that he's listening, but to anybody out there who thinks that Bitcoin is a hoax. Bitcoin was the world's first cryptocurrency. It came out in the year 2009. It was created by Satoshi Nakamoto. Still, to this day, nobody knows who that person is. Satoshi handed over the keys to a guy named Gavin Andreessen, who's actually a Free Talk Live listener and a longtime libertarian, liberty-loving person. And then fast forward about 7 or 8 years, to where Gavin was apparently pushed out, as I understand it, by the programmers who ended up pushing him out somehow. I don't know what all the details and behind the scenes are of that. But the man who Satoshi selected as his successor is no longer on the project. And now you've got a project, and now you've got Bitcoin, the world's most successful cryptocurrency at over $15,000 per coin, that you've got to spend more than $30 to send a transaction with. So it's messed up.
I would like to see us stop measuring the success of a cryptocurrency in its actual dollar value and start measuring the success of a cryptocurrency in its usage and utility.
Well,
for usage, Bitcoin's still the winner. Dash, I think, is number two now.
I don't think that's true. If you're talking about just straight up volume,
no. I mean usage, like businesses that are accepting.
Oh, because I was going to say volume. Ethereum's number two.
Dash is going to be number two as far as like usage, and then Bitcoin's going to be number one. But Bitcoin's quickly losing its spot at number one because of the fees. So it's going to be Dash. If it's useful,
yeah, right. You're talking
it's
about
successful. But if it's not useful, then
we live
me,
in kind of
just
a special place, though. Will, yeah. I mean, you can actually go and spend cryptocurrency in real life, and like, and we actually were Keen was just acknowledged as one of the top cryptocurrency accepting places in the world by foodtruckoperator.com. I posted that story over at freekeen.com today. Dash is big around here, and that's because we've got activists who've been pushing cryptocurrencies to local businesses, and the local businesses who initially had started taking Bitcoin, they no longer, well, they still do, but they don't get customers for it anymore. So they still love the idea of cryptocurrency and having this money that is no longer controlled by the state or banks, which is one of the real benefits and perks of using cryptocurrency. They're so excited about cryptocurrency because of Bitcoin, that they're open to other ideas. So it wasn't hard to sell them on taking this other thing, which is Dash. But if you actually look at coinmarketcap.com and then you sort by volume, so the amount traded over the last 24 hours, Bitcoin or BTC is number one, but you don't get to Dash until you hit number 13 on that particular list. So there are, you know, more than a dozen or about a dozen cryptocurrencies that are being at least online traded more often than Dash. But yes, you're right. In at least in the retailers of southern New Hampshire, Dash is the dominant player right now. That much is definitely true. I don't know how many people live in an area where there's more than one or two businesses that take Dash, however, because we're still in the initial phase of this. There's just not even that many businesses in real life that take cryptocurrency of any sort whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, there's supposed to be, like Johnson's business accepts multiple currencies.
Liberty-minded.com
t-shirts. A lot of online businesses, but there's supposed to be a bar in Florida, I believe, that accepts Verge, and another bar in Arizona, I believe it is, that accepts Verge currency. You've got some places that are now accepting Digibytes. You've got so you've got these new up and comers. According to John McAfee, Redcoin is becoming a popular coin.
Well, if John McAfee says it, then people will
overseas.
Do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Trust me, I know. Yep. Anytime he says anything, if I just stick a little money in whatever he's talking about, it doubles.
It goes up.
So, you know, I love John. Talk about something else. Just come tell me what you're going to talk about before you decide to talk about it.
I'm sure you and a bunch of other people would love to have the inside scoop his next tweet's going to be.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What was the problem this author, this critic asks that Bitcoin was intended to solve? Well, one of them was being able to send money around the world without having to go through the remittance companies. Was being able to send money to, let's say, your relatives in Africa or the Middle East or, you know, wherever. Mexico, wherever. Normally you'd have to go to Western Union or you'd have to go to MoneyGram. You'd have to pay them through the nose to be able to send money. And it's such a pain in the butt. I don't know if y'all have ever done this before, but
does Western Union or MoneyGram report to the government too so that there's taxes on that money? Or, you know,
they certainly would report to the government if the government asked them about their customers, but normally they would only report when cash transaction reports need to be filled out, I would think.
Like any transaction over $10,000,
that kind of thing,
right?
Yeah. So they would report those. They would report suspicious activity.
So if you needed to transfer $10,000 plus to any other country in the world, Bitcoin's still your option.
Bitcoin is an option for that, yeah. But again, why would you use Bitcoin when you could use one of the other dozens of competitors that are just as good, if not 10 times better, at actually sending money?
And cost a penny
and
or
cost
less.
A fraction of the price.
Presuming that you can sell that other currency in the country that you're transferring
money getting out of cryptocurrencies is one of the challenges of cryptocurrencies. But the problem that it was designed to solve was to transverse borders internationally without being able to, you know, without having to beg for permission to allow money to go from an individual to another individual or a business to business or whatever, without having to have some bank standing in the middle taking. Cryptocurrencies are successful because of good technology. The liberty-loving voluntarists who founded Zencash in 2017 took the best tech, like zero-knowledge anonymity and decentralized autonomous organizations, and are creating a secure platform for money, messages, and media that can be sent to anyone, anywhere in the world. Zencash is a cryptocurrency dedicated to peace, anonymity, and decentralization. Find out more at Zencash.com. That's Zencash.com. It's Free Talk Live. You may join us on the radio. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. And Skype on in here at Skype username lrn.fm. Here in the studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Will.
Cryptocurrency is hot right now, but crypto is where it's at because of good technology. The liberty-loving voluntarists who founded Zencash in 2017 took the best tech, like zero-knowledge anonymity and decentralized autonomous organizations, and they're creating a secure platform for money and messages that can be sent to anyone anywhere in the world. Zencash is a cryptocurrency dedicated to peace, anonymity, and decentralization. Find out more over at zencash.com. I was looking at their white paper because, you know, they came to us and they wanted to do some advertising to promote what is a relatively new cryptocurrency. So, you know, yeah, keep that in mind. This is brand new. It's
I'm holding some, of course.
It's not perfect at this point. Like, the software isn't isn't exactly, you know, perfect. It's pretty cutting edge. But, you know, of course, I want to look at something before we decide whether we're going to actually accept any kind of advertising money from them. And, you know, at first it was like, okay, well, this is pretty brand new. This is pretty pretty small. Of course, it's, you know, that could mean that it's going to blow up someday. I mean, you have no idea what's going to happen with cryptocurrencies. I remember the attitude I had when back when Bitcoin was all, you know, the number one king, solidly the 90% market dominator a few years back. I remember being at a Bitcoin conference and this guy who was a programmer, one of the, you know, dozens of altcoins that existed at that time, this thing called Dash came on our show. And my attitude back then was like, oh, yeah, another wannabe Bitcoin. What do you got, buddy? You know, like, oh, yeah, tell me what makes this so special. Because there were all these Me Too currencies out there, and it's like, how do you pick?
That's still kind of your attitude when you see new currencies.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, whatever,
but
buddy.
But at least I'm aware that I had that attitude before, and now I know that Bitcoin is probably not going to be on top forever.
Yeah.
And so I'm definitely more open-minded to some of the smaller cryptocurrencies today, but I still want to know, what is it that makes this thing different, better, you know, unique? And I got to say, I think there's some value in having people who understand economics behind a cryptocurrency.
Yes.
You can look at what happened with Bitcoin Core, and you can see some of the public statements from some of their programmers these days. There's this one guy named Luke Dash Jr. who has just come right out and said he loves the state, basically, that he loves the government. And, I mean, I don't have the exact quotes, but they are on his Twitter and they've been spread around. And this dude is not a libertarian.
No,
he's not. Now, he's not the only programmer, obviously, but this is sort of the idea of, oh, well, they ran the one guy out, Gavin, who was a real, like, principled libertarian guy. He's no longer involved. Mm-hmm. So you take the people out of the organization who actually understand economics. You take the people out who understand peace and principle. And then you know, shouldn't be surprised when the currency is no longer what it once was, when it no longer is a solution to ending the state. So that was why when I was reading through the white paper for Zencash and I actually saw them use the word voluntarism or voluntarist, that kind of perked me up like, I don't know how many other cryptocurrencies out there explicitly call in favor of voluntarism.
Vertcoin.
Is that right?
Vertcoin
That's good
is
to know.
Very, very hardcore about the whole concept of decentralization.
That's good.
They see themselves as they should be the anarchist chosen currency because they're all about decentralization.
Are they actual anarchists, though? Because you can be for decentralization and not be a...
Everybody that I know that I've met is, at the very least, in favor of making the control... The circles of control as small as possible. They may not be full on anarchists, but they are libertarian to some degree.
So that's why I said, like, actually having the word voluntarism in the white paper, that was pretty cool. And they, you know, this works. You can get Zencash's official wallet, obviously, over at zencash.com. They also have it's available through Coinomi if you have the Coinomi wallet
or Evercoin. Yep. That's how I got my hands on my first a little bit of it was through Evercoin.
Yeah, so I'm interested in learning more about Zencash over time. And again, keep in mind, you know, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Generally, cryptocurrencies have gone up in value over time. That trend seems likely to continue, but I'm not an investment advisor and I can't predict the future. So
I've been holding Zen for maybe a month now, and so far my trend line is up. I bought in at probably around $30-$32 a coin. It's trading now somewhere around $40, a little over $40 a coin. So, you know, that's an upward trend line. There have been, it's followed the rest of the market with, you know, when the markets have these huge dips that go across the market.
It goes down too.
It goes down too. But right now it's sitting comfortably at literally 8 cents under $45.
Per Zencash.
And like I said, I bought in, you know, a month ago when they were 30, $32. So that's a moderate increase. That's a 25% increase in value over the course of the last month.
And as I understand it, they have some kind of a plan to add in decentralized file storage or file distribution. That hasn't been fleshed out entirely yet, so I'm not too comfortable talking in any detail about it because I don't know enough to say about it. But
a lot of these new currencies that are coming out, I like, what is it, Cardano, what they call them third-generation currencies, because like the first generation was Bitcoin.
Yeah, because that's all there was for a few years.
Then the second generation was like Ethereum, Dash, and that kind of thing. Yep. And now there's these third generation coins that are coming out, the Verge, the Digibytes, the Redcoin, the Zencash, the all these new ones that they're taking the original ideas and they're saying, okay, this was a good idea, but here's ways we can improve upon it. Here's ways we can make it more private, more secure.
Which is actually what Zencash has done. They've actually taken the Zcash technology, the zero knowledge, and they've taken that to the next level.
To the next level. And that's what I love about cryptocurrencies is because of the fact that if it weren't for the open nature of the market in cryptocurrencies, you wouldn't be able to have a Zcash and then a Zencash.
No, because somebody would sue another person.
Somebody would have regulated it. They would have regulated. Yeah. A regulator would have came in and made it to where you could only be like Zcash. If you did anything extra, well, that'd be new.
Well, that would only be if you got a licensing fee or you paid a licensing fee to Zcash, because then they would own the intellectual property and patents and, you know, all that crap that basically destroys innovation and destroys competition. And, you know, that's a whole other story.
Yep.
So the toll-free number here, again, check out zencash.com. We'll be talking more about it over a while. In fact, I've even got an interview with one of the founders of Zencash that I did last week. We'll be posting that at some point during, I believe, this week as one of the after shows on Free Talk Live. So back to the story, the Bitcoin hoax from HuffingtonPost.com. He had asked the question of, well, what's the problem for which Bitcoin's supposed to be a solution? More on that in a moment. He says, for the time being, the immediate Bitcoin problem is that speculators in the virtual currency have been on a wild ride, with the price of a Bitcoin rising from under $1,000 to as high as over $18,000 and back down to $12,000 before settling for the moment, when he wrote this, at around $14,000. This makes a few early bettors very rich, but exactly what real economic good does that do? Okay, in case you missed it, he says, here's the pitch. Paying with checks, credit cards, or bank transfers leaves a trail, but there is no trail with Bitcoin. Not true. Bitcoin is entirely trackable.
It's a gigantic public trail.
It's a public ledger.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's,
you can trace your Bitcoin back to every single place it has ever been on the blockchain.
You can hide like cash and bank transactions better than you can. At least you can burn receipts and like shred paper and stuff. Yeah. Bitcoin, the blockchain is right there.
It's forever.
It's there.
Yeah, you can't get rid of it.
Unless you shut down the internet.
Pretty much. And even then, you still have copies of it everywhere. So the blockchain still exists,
exactly.
Even if you shut down
the internet. Well, what about coin mixing services?
There are people who know how to trace coins through coin mixers, as I understand it. Like the
like
real
Monero.
Smart characters, the ones who, you know, really know the currency and the technology. Mm-hmm. If you've got the time, you can track something through a coin mixer.
Interesting.
That's my understanding as somebody who's never done that.
Right.
But So there is a trail. He's wrong about that. Goes on here, though. In a world of drug traffickers, terrorists, and Kremlin weaponizing of all things cyber, this is supposed to be a plus, he says. Say what? We'll continue with his attack on Bitcoin, calling it a hoax. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. And you can take control of the airwaves here and bring up whatever's on your mind on Free Talk Live. It is Free Talk Live, and you're invited to join us on the radio here. Bring up whatever you want to discuss. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. If you would like to get interactive with other Free Talk Live listeners and hosts of the show, you ought to check out the Free Talk Live forums over at forum.freetalklive.com. Like the rest of the features on our site, it's free to use, so head on over there at forum.freetalklive.com. In the studio tonight, it's Ian
and Johnson
and Will.
We're talking about the so-called Bitcoin hoax. And if there's any hoax going on, it's by the guy writing this particular article, because he's either woefully misinformed or purposefully telling lies in this particular story, because, well, that's pretty much what you have to do to attack cryptocurrency, is you've got to be dishonest. And in this case, he is claiming that Bitcoin is, let's see, according to the article over at Huffington Post, he claims that Bitcoin is anonymous, which, no, it's not, actually. Now, while it is possible to use Bitcoin in a semi-anonymous manner, if you take enough steps, you know, it is possible, for instance, to open up a Bitcoin wallet and not tell anybody about it, and then nobody knows that that's your wallet. But the transactions themselves are all visible publicly on the blockchain, which is the technology that is basically a public ledger that backs the Bitcoin and many other cryptocurrencies. And then he goes on to claim further that, well, you're going to love this one. He claims there's no fee. Conventional forms of money, he writes, other than cash, have transaction costs. Your checkbook, your credit cards, not to mention digital forms of money transfer such as PayPal and Venmo nick you for fees. But there is no fee with Bitcoin. That's just straight up false. Bitcoin does have fees. In fact, that's the biggest problem with it right now.
Is there huge fees?
The fees have gotten out of control because, as we've explained many times, the programmers have absolutely failed to adjust the programming, adjust the network parameters to where it can actually handle more transactions, because it's become so popular that the network's full, and so people have been bidding up on the fees. But even when the fees weren't $30 per transaction, they were still, you know, back in when they were lower, you could still pay 2 to 3 cents for a Bitcoin transaction. Now, it's true that in the early days, you could send Bitcoin transactions for no fee. That is a true statement, but you can't do that anymore. And it's been quite a long time since you could actually get a Bitcoin transaction through with no fee. So absolutely not true what he's saying there. He does go on to say, thanks to its ingenious tamper-proof blockchain crypto technology, don't ask, he writes. Well, you should ask, actually, because the blockchain is the most, I mean, it's one of the most important parts about Bitcoin. That's why Bitcoin is different and special, is because of the blockchain, the idea of a decentralized, distributed, meaning that there are copies of it all over the world, ledger that is public. That's the basic guts of Bitcoin. Besides the cryptographic security that's placed on top of that ledger, it's the ledger itself, this immutable thing that cannot be changed. If you have a copy of the blockchain on your computer, and we do, we've got one here at LRN Studios, if I go into the blockchain, if I had the technological know-how to do this, to go in and actually edit Bitcoin, and I happen to know your Bitcoin address, Will, and I say, I'm going to take Bitcoin out of your address and put it over here into my address, and I, you know, tap out whatever commands there are to do that. As soon as it broadcasts that to the network, the rest of the network, the thousands of other nodes with the exact, you know, with the blockchain on their computers, they're constantly comparing to one another, and the other ones are going to look at that and say, well, that's not authorized. Rejected. So fraud is basically an impossibility because of this blockchain technology. As long as there's more than a few nodes, like if there were only 10 nodes on the Bitcoin blockchain and some malicious attacker owned 6 of them, well, then that person can do whatever they want. But there are thousands of nodes, and they're owned by whoever wants to own one of them. So it's truly decentralized and distributed. So it is important to ask what the blockchain is. This guy's just saying, oh, you shouldn't even ask about it. Going on, he says, thanks to the blockchain, Bitcoin is absolutely safe. If you believe that, I have a Russian bridge for you to buy. And unlike nasty governments which do things like managing the money supply or preventing destabilizing speculation, Bitcoin is independent of any government. This is also billed as a plus. And you're damn right it's billed as a plus. Can we look at the history of government money for a moment? And can you find me a government currency that actually, you know, is issued by fiat and has somehow gained in value over time?
Well, it's not just that. It's not just that kind of control. It's control over where it can be sent, such as like economic sanctions. So,
sure.
Like, I have a friend. He's an Iranian immigrant. He and his wife are attorneys. They live in Texas. Mm. They're both in prison right now.
Whoa.
His mother got very, very sick, and they broke federal law and sent mother money.
In Iran.
In Iran. Mm. So that she could have financial assistance in paying her medical
bills. But that's prohibitive.
For cancer. Yep. That's against the law. You're not allowed to transfer money to Iran. And when it got out, when it got to the feds that's what was going on, they came in and they shut them down and they sent the husband and wife to prison for helping his mother. No, they were sending money. They were in violation of economic embargo. They were sending money to Iran. It didn't matter why, you know. The courts were happy to acknowledge, you know, there was nothing bad. You weren't doing anything bad with it. You were sending it to a sick old woman. We'll totally acknowledge that that's what you did, but you did it without our permission. Therefore, you go to prison.
Wow.
But if they'd used Bitcoin, they'd still be sitting at home right now. Their children wouldn't be, you know, with a sister. Mm. You know, the families wouldn't have been ripped apart, and the mother would have got her treatment without having her son and daughter-in-law sent to prison for 2.5 years in order to do so.
She probably would have had some money left over, too, if she had held on to it.
Yep.
Man, that's tragic. How long did they go to prison?
2.5 years.
Wow. So, yeah, I mean, economic freedom, that's another reason to use Bitcoin. Not having to ask permission, being separated from the governments. And, of course, this is Huffington Post, so the idea that the government isn't involved, they see that as a negative. Anyway, going on here, he writes, in case you missed it, check out the era of 19th century free banking in the U.S. It was a time when tiny banks could create infinite amounts of credit. The result was an era of euphoric credit booms, followed by bank panics and depressions. Well, I don't know if this...
What the hell does that have to do with Bitcoin? You can't create an infinite amount of Bitcoin because you just feel like it.
No. In fact, the system's designed to prevent that.
To prevent that, specifically to prevent inflation and the ability to create it without, you know, like there's a specific finite amount and you can't just get a million Bitcoin out of the system if you feel like it.
Yeah, that's interesting that he makes that claim. I mean, you could suggest that he's saying that because it's not controlled, you're subject to whatever these Bitcoin people want to do to you.
Yeah. Basically, that somehow, well, here's the issue, is they don't, these are people that they don't know. Like, they don't understand cryptography. This guy's probably got a journalism degree.
Yeah.
You know, like, he has no technical understanding of economics or cryptography or anything that has to do with this issue.
Right.
So he's basically just saying, well, you know, I heard this thing about what happened in 1920 and the Great Depression, and it was bad. So anything that I think could possibly, in the slightest way, resemble that must also be bad. No control equals bad. That's what they taught me in school when we learned about the Great Depression. The reason the Great Depression happened was because the government wasn't allowed to control everything. So if the government can't control it, then that means everyone is going to starve to death.
That's basically the viewpoint here. But the number of Bitcoins, he writes, in circulation is strictly limited to 21 million, which he also gets wrong. He puts a dollar sign in front of the 21.
Yeah.
No. No, it's 21 million Bitcoins.
Not 21 million dollars.
$21 million worth of Bitcoins.
We're already well over $21 million.
We're at $300 billion worth of Bitcoin right now if you go to CoinMarketCap.
And there's still plenty of Bitcoin to be released.
That's right. There's only about not quite 17 million of the 21 million that are out there right now. So he says, that's the claim anyway. Well, there are now hundreds of other digital currencies, and thanks to the miracle of leverage and speculation in bitcoins, the true sum is far higher. Exactly how much higher? We don't really know. Now, in fairness, central banks and bank regulators did a pretty good job of managing the money supply for half a century after the Great Depression.
No, they didn't. Wait a second. Did you not live through 2007 or 1999 or 1987 or 1984?
Or every single year since 1913?
1978? Or like, which economic crash did you not live through? Which recession, which grand inflation did you not live through that? I'm only 36 years old and I lived through these things. So, like, what
he says they did pretty
good. That's
probably
the biggest falsehood of this entire episode right there. Was
pretty
that
good.
Statement.
Yeah. Yes. Losing 96% of its value
that's
in the course
good.
Of its
just
existence.
Just compare it to the Zimbabwe dollar.
Most people don't understand. Well, compare it to gold and silver. That's what most people don't understand. It's the very basic sort of easy way of looking at money is that if you had a certain amount of gold, let's say an ounce of gold, right?
Yeah.
You know, an ounce of gold would buy a pretty nice suit in, you know, what, the 1920s, you know. And guess what? Still buys a nice suit today.
That's right.
Because that's about what an ounce of gold is worth.
But $100 doesn't.
That's right.
Minimum wage in the 60s and silvers today will buy you more than the $15 minimum wage.
What's more profitable, running your business or doing bookkeeping? Doing your business, of course, but you want to keep your books so that you can maximize your tax savings, right? What if I told you that there's a person that's a bookkeeper, accountant, and law school graduate that's also a hardcore libertarian?
My name is Melanie Johnson, and I hate the state. I will aggressively help you to minimize your tax exposure and maximize profits, all while staying within the law.
Melanie's your best choice for your taxes and bookkeeping needs. Go to tax.freetalklive.com and check out our website, tax.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
It is Free Talk Live, and you can bring up whatever you want. Just dial in toll free to join us here as we launch into the second hour of the program. Our number is 855-450-FREE like freedom, 855-450-3733. We've got Skype at Skype username lrn.fm, and in the studio with you tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Will.
Coming up, Johnson, you want to talk about the 1970s and the American dream?
That's right.
All right, a decade that none of the three of us were alive for. So.
That's incorrect.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When were you
born?
Yeah,
he's older than we are.
I was born in the 70s.
Yeah, but you weren't, like, around. You know, you were just a little baby.
What does that mean? No, I was not getting around in the 70s. I was
you had no conscious
basically
awareness.
A baby.
That was basically the decade that ended the American dream.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that coming up here. Your calls and thoughts also welcome. Plus, we've got a little bit more from this guy who's claiming Bitcoin is a hoax, but yet he's probably up to at least five solid lies that he's posted in this story so far. We'll tell you more about that, but first we go to the Commonwealth, where Ricky is on the line. Go ahead, Ricky.
Thank you, Brother Ian. I guess you read my topic.
Nope,
so
I did not. I've already told you I don't read the things that you send on Skype. You send them constantly, but I don't read a single one of them.
You know what? Okay, now here's the thing. Don't laugh,
and
Johnson.
Neither does anyone else in the studio, just so you know.
I'll say I'm sorry, boy.
Thank you, brother. Tonight, very serious. And I had one question for you, Brother Freeman.
Yeah.
And then after that, I'd like to settle my differences with Will C. as a gentleman.
Okay, we'll go with your question, and we'll see how that goes.
Well, first of all, the question that I have for you now when it comes to lying, I remember talking to you in the past. And we agreed on one thing, that it's never okay to lie, like the Bible says. Simply let your yes mean yes and your no mean no.
It is certainly okay to lie in certain circumstances, like if you're under duress.
Or like protecting somebody else. So that being said, if you're Donald Trump, he's protecting his family and he's protecting all these others, so from jail and also other things. So I guess it's okay to lie then. So we might as well just forget about that. Now
I don't even know what you're referring to. If somebody's going to go to jail and they've not actually harmed another person, then I would say it's totally fine to lie to protect that person.
I don't agree with that. Now, if I may talk to Will C.
Okay. He's right here. Will Coley, the imam of the Malik Center.
Howdy.
Will C.
Yes, sir.
Good evening to you. I'm Ricky.
We know who you are, Ricky.
Howdy. How are you doing tonight, Ricky?
I'm doing just fine. Now, I will say Will. Now, from the very first time that you and I have spoke, quite some time ago, I will say tonight I have a way we can settle this.
Settle what?
Well, our differences, because I have been throughout the years, I will say, and I'll tell you how I'm planning to do that, and I think we can definitely do it. I have, let's see here, I've been laughed at, slandered, things have been said about me that were untrue.
I don't think Will Coley has done anything of this sort to you.
No, I've laughed at him.
Okay, true.
Well, actually, see, here's the thing, Will. Now, you definitely can respond to this, of course, but here's how this goes. You see, as the traditionally is, I have to provide a list of all these things I say, but I will say to you this. I would like to settle with this to you as gentlemen. In New Hampshire in the distant future, and here's how we can do that. Basically, I am exercising my right to challenge. In New Hampshire, To the delay, brother, with period pistols, and I'm not joking with you. Okay, if you dishonored if you don't accept my challenge with period pistols.
You're challenging him to a pistol duel.
The real deal, traditionally. I already have my will.
What is your grievance against him?
My grievance? Well, first of all,
I think his grievance is that I usually list trades while he's on the air instead of paying attention. to the fact that I'm supposed to be doing a job. Like, basically, I'm getting paid to do a job, but whenever Ricky comes on the air, I do my own thing instead of actually paying attention like I should.
Hmm.
And I acknowledge and state that openly, and because of that, I've offended him. So, you know.
Okay. Give you my grievance, Brother Freeman.
It's okay.
All right.
Here's my grievance. As an example, and I'm not kidding about my challenge to the Dulea with period pistols.
Verge is like a nickel, by the way.
By the rules. Now, here's my reasons. As an example of last and before that, see, not long ago, he made
You haven't even answered a question. What is this pants? What is the issue?
It was like $3. It's at $7 now.
Okay, here's the example. Recently, not long, within the past week or so, this man was on the show. And the fact is, he said right in front of everybody, see, it's not only my honor, it's everybody that call into this show. It's not only myself, but yours truly, and I'll tell you how. He was in the room, in there, and so were you on that night. And a caller called in. And as an example, he said to that caller, you are sitting in a room full of anarchists. You were on that night. Now, I didn't hear you say a word to that night. And I'll tell you what, I've had it with what Will C has been doing. I'm not alone. There are lots of other people in the
community. So you're mad because he said the word anarchist and I didn't take the time to debunk that?
It's even beyond that. I'm not the only one upset with this guy.
No. You know, I mean, I'm sure there are other people who are upset with him, but you're the only one who really cares enough to call in and challenge him to a duel.
If he does not,
aren't we a room full of anarchists?
I don't use the term for myself. No.
Voluntarist. Yeah.
You are a coward if you do not take my challenge on the code of honor to the traditional duel in New Hampshire in the distant future with period pistols. You are
Are you denying his duel, Will Coley?
It's illegal now, as far as I know, is it not?
Yeah, I think it's a misdemeanor charge in New Hampshire.
It's a misdemeanor, right?
I think.
Dueling with pistols is a misdemeanor?
Maybe it's a violation. I don't know. I know that in Washington State, I think it's actually legal to have a duel. I don't know if with pistols it's legal, but to actually fisticuffs, fist fights, that I believe is legal in Washington State.
Wow.
But Ricky, why do you feel like violence is the solution to these problems? I mean, it just sounds like you're complaining about what somebody said on the radio.
I will explain that also. See, something that also Will C knows nothing about. The spiritual. You see, the duel is
I think
not
he knows about, plenty about the spiritual. He's an imam at the Malik Center, which is a mosque here. But you didn't answer my question. If you're not going to answer questions, we can just move on.
I am going to answer it. You see, here's the answer. Because the duel is not about a ball cap and powder like these pistols I'm recommending, period. It's spiritual. It's a spiritual duel about honor. And the one without honor.
I have never heard anyone claim that shooting somebody dead is a spiritual occasion. I mean, that's a new one to me, Ricky. Thank you for the call tonight. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733.
I didn't really like that episode of Looney Tunes anyway.
Always entertaining.
Foghorn Leghorn challenged George P. Dog to a duel.
I remember that.
I think he tricked him. He, like, tied him to the doghouse or something, and, they're trying to
smacked
do their
him
duel.
With a 2x4.
It didn't work out very well. He's just very tricky, that Foghorn Leghorn.
Go away, boy. You bother me. I got work to do.
Yeah, sorry. I had him up, but I just hadn't found the right one because there's like 70 of these things on this this soundboard. So sometimes it's nice to have ones related to what he's saying. I don't see anything in here about a duel, unfortunately. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE.
Somebody
will
have to find that clip online.
Either that or it's probably not him. It's probably Yosemite Sam.
No. It was Foghorn Leghorn and Barnyard Dog. There was a duel. They were arch enemies.
Like beating a dead horse. He's got no get up and go. Adios, you chicken plucking little stinker.
The name of the episode name that Foghorn challenges Barnyard Dog to a duel is Your Mother Was a Rooster.
I say, your mother was a rooster,
yeah,
sir.
That's right. So you can dial in here. You can bring up anything you want. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE.
Including shooting a host, if you'd like.
Yep, that's true. You can do whatever.
This is not new territory.
All right, so back to the hoax, the so-called Bitcoin hoax by this lover of central banks. who he claims that the central banks and bank regulators did a pretty good job, he claims, of managing the money supply for a half a century after the Great Depression. And then he says they messed up big time. In the 1980s, regulators started getting captured by fintech wizards, people not unlike Bitcoin enthusiasts, who started inventing new forms of infinite leverage. I don't know what he's talking about here. Okay, and then he gets into the collapse of 2008. We'll tell you about it coming up here in moments. You can share your thoughts. Another attack on Bitcoin. Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. You dial toll-free here to bring up what you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. And you can join us online. Head over to freetalklive.com. Enjoy the features waiting for you on the site. Now, Blink Home Security System is available to you. It is a super easy-to-use home security system that actually has wireless cameras. So the install time is super fast. Basically, you unbox them, you put the batteries in them, and then you set it all up via your Wi-Fi-enabled device. Makes it super easy to do. And very affordable, by the way. You can get three Blink cams for what some of the other guys will charge you for one security camera. Head over to blinkprotect.com/FTL to get yours. And again, that's blinkprotect.com/FTL, like Free Talk Live. Like I said, super easy to set up. You can actually customize when the cameras operate, so when they will send little clips of what happens in front of them and how long those clips can be. You can set all that up when you put it all together, or anytime you can change it. Go to blinkprotect.com/FTL, like Free Talk Live. As we go to Stefan, he's in Ohio, also on Skype. Go ahead, Stefan, you're on Free Talk Live with Ian Johnson and Will.
First of all, I want to say, Will, that is the coolest smartphone case I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, Will's got a Game Boy smartphone case.
Isn't it cool?
Yeah, it is. But what I'd like to
discuss
is... I
bought it with Bitcoin.
Right on.
Really?
Yeah.
True libertarianism. Anyway, I was having a discussion on a Discord server earlier about economic libertarianism, and somebody had told me that it's ineffective because nobody will share their wealth if they have a lot of money. They say that if people wanted to share their wealth, rich people would be sharing it like crazy nowadays, and nobody would be starving.
They are.
Yeah, rich people are donating constantly to charities and things like that. Yeah. So I don't know what this guy's talking
about. This person's a Patrick, commie socialist.
Yeah, obviously.
Let's see. I can think of, just right off the top of my head, Patrick Byrne, millionaire, gave $5,000 to the Malik Center.
That's
right. All I said was, hey, we've got this project. We want to do this interfaith center.
You'd met him before.
Well, yeah, I'd met him before. You said if I ever wanted a favor from you... Well, this is my favorite. I want you to help me with this charity effort. And he was like, here's $5,000. Same thing with Bruce Fenton. I'm like, you know what, Bruce? I want us to be able to say that we're the first mosque to have half of our budget be a cryptocurrencies. And he was like, all right, here's $1,000 in cryptocurrency. Bam. Boom. You know, without question. And there's other wealthy people in the community who, you know, I don't know if they want me to be as public with their right. donations, but they were without question, you know, like, oh yeah, I've got this here, take it. Yep. You know, I believe in this charitable effort that you're putting together here, take it. So I don't believe that at all. I've seen so much of it to the opposite.
This conversation I had more things to do with, you know, like healthcare and providing food for poor people. They said, well, if the rich people really wanted to donate, they donate to hospitals and take care of people's hospital bills, and you're just drinking the Ayn Rand Kool-Aid and things of that nature. Do you think that there would be hospitals in a society where it's pure economic libertarianism?
Yes, because there
are still hospitals that are free to go to?
Yes, because
there are. No, that's not a service that's valuable to anybody.
Because there are. I mean, right now in Pakistan, you have ambulance services that are better than here in America, and they were built around some old man who didn't have a, you know, I won't put it that way. He didn't have two nickels to rub together and couldn't read or write, and he decided that Pakistan needed a medical service. And now, he started in the 50s, and today you've got 1,500 ambulances that have better response times than you can get from ambulances in some of the best publicly funded cities here in America. You've got services for invalids. You've got services for the elderly who have been kicked out of their homes because their families can't take care of them, children who have been turned out on the streets because their parents can't take care of them, women, battered women shelters, girls' schools, medical facilities, mental health facilities, all of them paid for through donations. The Evie Foundation specifically rejects government handouts. They will not accept government funding or subsidy from the U.S. or from Pakistan.
No.
And they've created, he literally was a poor man who created a philanthropic empire all across Pakistan. When we're double tapping and we're killing ambulance
people, you need to stop doing that, man.
We are killing people that work for this man.
I've not killed anybody in an ambulance. I've never killed anyone, period.
When the U.S. government is double tapping and killing first responders, it's Evie Foundation workers that they're killing. You know, and all of this is created through philanthropy, through specifically rejecting government handouts. And he says, when the people of Pakistan no longer want these services, they will stop paying me to provide them.
Yeah.
So this is a free market alternative to, you know, standard emergency services like what we have in many places here in the U.S. Then.
Not only is it a free market alternative, it's superior to Pakistani state alternative.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it's superior to than American provided state services. Their response time, the ambulance response times from the Evie Foundation are better than you can get here in the U.S.
That reminds me of something I read a couple days ago. I think I saw it on Austin Peterson's page where somebody had said that Uber was a lot cheaper than an ambulance service.
It is.
And responded quicker.
It is.
And
God, it's probably
so,
true.
And they were like, if you have a stomach ache, don't just bother dialing 911. Just call Uber and say, hey, drive me to the hospital.
They'll be there faster and it won't cost you $1,700 one way.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous.
So your guy that you're talking to here on this Discord server, which as I understand is a basically a series of chat rooms that people can run and talk in as well, this dude obviously does not understand rich people. Many of them are wealthy and they share their wealth.
Well, his tag is market socialist, so I think that explains a lot.
Yeah,
there was no surprise there.
If they've got a bunch of money, that usually means they're looking for something to do with it. And so when somebody comes along and says, hey, I've got this great thing that we're doing, do you want to sponsor it? In a lot of cases, they will. And even as we talked about on Sunday night with the chapter in Economics in One Lesson about saving, you can put your money away in ways that make you more money, but also help people as well. So rich people are constantly reinvesting their money, donating their money. Now, there may be some rich person who's just socked it all away underneath a mattress somewhere, but I would tell you that those are the unusual characters rather than the typical ones.
I'd love for some guy to come to me and be like, you know what? I've been working in lawn care and, you know, walk shoveling for 8 years and I want to break out of my own business, but I just need like $5,000 startup capital to go along with what I've got. I've got this equipment. I want to get better equipment. I'll give you 5% for 5 years to pay you back. I would love for somebody to come to me with an offer like that so that I could help them start their own business. And at the same time, now I get to sit back and enjoy a residual income.
But wouldn't that be more of an investment than a charitable donation?
To some extent, yeah. But if that person can't get the investment through the traditional channels,
it's both.
It almost comes off as a charitable donation. So if they they can't get a loan through a bank.
Banks aren't there to help people, man. Banks are there to make money.
That's true.
Hence why I don't use them.
Stefan, thanks for the call here tonight. I appreciate hearing from you. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And even if you can point out a rich person to these people that hate rich people, that's actually very charitable and you can give them real evidence for it, they'll just claim that they're not giving away enough for their satisfaction.
The week that Patrick sent me a $5,000 check, I saw five other groups he sent one to.
We're coming up. Free talk. Bitcoin.com is your premier source for everything Bitcoin related. Get help buying Bitcoins or choosing a Bitcoin wallet at Bitcoin.com. Read the latest news or even engage with the community on the Bitcoin forum at Bitcoin.com. You can even find places to spend your Bitcoin or play online games with the cryptocurrency. The source for all your Bitcoin needs and news, Bitcoin.com. That's Bitcoin.com. It is Free Talk Live. You can dial toll free to join us right here. Our number is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype at Skype username lrn.fm with you in the studio for tonight. You've got me, Ian.
And Johnson.
And Will.
And don't forget, you can join us online. Just head over to freetalklive.com. And enjoy the features that we have waiting for you over at freetalklive.com. All those other talk shows out there, they want to charge you for accessing their websites. Ours is free, so head on over and enjoy. Also, if you want to help build a better financial system for everyone, you can join Dash. Dash is digital cash. It's a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast, it can be private and easy, fees are low, and transactions are quick, and can be confirmed instantly. You can pay anyone, anywhere in the world, anytime, for just pennies on the dollar. Dash is decentralized and run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Anyone can invest in Dash and earn rewards for helping run the Dash network. So join Dash and help create a better financial system for everyone. Take back control over your financial future today. Find out more at Dash.org. And there's a lot of momentum behind Dash right now. So go to Dash.org and find out why. As we continue, we'll take your calls about whatever you want to discuss. In the first hour of the show, we did talk about the beginning of a story called The Bitcoin Hoax over at HuffingtonPost.com by Robert Kuttner, who has told multiple lies and or, if he didn't know they were lies, is spreading just blatant misinformation about Bitcoin, like claiming that it's anonymous and claiming that there's no fees, which is both false. Bitcoin is a public ledger and there are definitely fees. In fact, that's one of the worst parts about Bitcoin these days. He then goes on to claim that the central banks and bank regulators did a pretty good job of managing the money supply for half a century after the Great Depression. But then he claims that fintech wizards, who he claims are people like Bitcoin enthusiasts, started inventing new forms of infinite leverage in the 1980s. It took about 20 years for this brew to become truly toxic. The result was the collapse of 2008. So what is he talking about here, claiming that there was some sort of thing that was done differently in the 1980s? He's just he doesn't really get detailed on exactly what he's suggesting. He claims there was regulatory capture in the 1980s, and those people who captured the regulators in government somehow did something to create the collapse in 2008. It would seem to me that it was the federal government's monetary policy, which has always been inflationary, that was part of the reason why there was a collapse in 2008. What is it that he's saying changed? I mean, I'm not expecting either of you to know, but just asking aloud, you know, what is it that he's suggesting here happened in the 1980s in government to lead to the collapse of 2008? I don't know.
In the 80s?
That's his claim here. He says they invented new forms of infinite leverage.
Probably the banking regulations that allowed them to
credit default swaps and stuff like
that.
The creation
kind
of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. What's a credit default swap?
Credit default swaps is basically where you're betting against the creditors. You make money if people default on their loans.
On their loans.
Because they started packaging debt into these groupings of some good, some bad creditors to give them different ratings, like AAA rating, you know, different ratings of these securities, essentially. I guess you're buying like a security of debt, which is very strange in and of itself.
Well, no, you buy the debt, and then because you own the debt, you get like whatever the profits would be of the interest if you own the debt.
Right.
But
if people are paying on it.
What they're doing is they're packaging different loans together in groups and selling them like mutual funds or stock options, basically. Hmm. And what happens if you buy tens of thousands of those, and then there's something happens like, I don't know, all of the manufacturing and IT jobs in the country disappear in a 5-year stretch, then all the people holding all that bad debt, if you bet that the people would pay because they were AAA rated loans, which means that those people will pay, you lose your hat. Mm-hmm. But if you were smart, like some of the people were, and you say, oh, look, they're packaging garbage with AAA loans and calling them all AAA. This is built on shaky sand.
Right.
I'm going to bet against it. The people who were smart enough to leverage against the economy made boatloads.
Well, he claims we have a lot of work to do in order to return the business of financial regulation and good monetary policy to democratic control. Now, when was it that it was ever under democratic control? Because it seems to me that the Federal Reserve was started by an elite group of bankers on Jekyll Island back in 1913 to benefit the bankers. So I'm not sure what sort of fantasy this guy's living in when he talks about democratic control over monetary policy. Just because you get to vote for people into Congress, you know, of course you're usually choosing between terrible choices, but just because you get to cast a vote doesn't mean you actually have any kind of democratic influence on what goes on in Washington, D.C. as far as monetary policy is concerned. It doesn't matter whether it's Barack Obama or Donald Trump or George Bush. The monetary policy of the federal government continues to be print, 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 print. Inflate, inflate, inflate. And that, of course, benefits the government and it benefits the people that are immediately connected to it, like the military-industrial complex that, you know, receives the printed money first before it's truly devalued by circulating through the economy. So, I mean, what kind of fantasy is he looking at here, saying there's democratic control over monetary policy? There's never been such a thing in the history of the United States. As long as the government's been in charge of printing money. If you want to talk about democratic control, look at cryptocurrencies. There are actually cryptocurrencies with voting systems baked into them.
Yep.
So if you are interested in seeing how different control structures can work,
go to Discord.
Well, now, Discord, they're different servers, right?
You can get tapped into... Mm-hmm. All the people who are working on these different kinds of currencies, and you really get a feel for what each different community finds important. Some of these communities are strictly profit motive driven, and they're very open about that fact. And you get that from the way they talk to each other and the way their posts are done in these chat rooms. And then there's other coins, you know, and I keep going back to Vertcoin. Partially because they're going to be a sponsor of our new radio show, but also because their community I'm a part of, and I'm friends with a lot of the people there, and they have a very democratic system. Like, it's all about like community and, you know, keeping things local type, you know, that kind of thing. You know, like, they don't want mining to be concentrated in the hands of like 16 mining pools in China. You know, they want everything to be very decentralized and very voluntarist in nature. And you get that feel from the way they talk. But then you can go into other ones and you can feel like you go to Netcoin. Those people are straight up statists. And you can hear it by the fact that they're very, like, they're happy that they might get recognized for some government regulation. You know, yikes. So it's like the microcosm of what democratic economics could look like, because you see every kind of economic model within these different... You have Putin coins.
And if you don't like it, you can walk away. If you don't like it, you know, if you don't like the way one of them's organized...
That's right.
You can opt out of
cash
that particular...
Cash out, put it in something else.
Right. So he goes on, he says, but if you think that task, talking about monetary policy, can be entrusted to an algorithm, consider this. It's an old idea. Economists Milton Friedman and Friedrich Hayek advocated putting the money supply on autopilot. Again, this guy is either intentionally misrepresenting cryptocurrency, or he is totally ignorant and doesn't know what he's talking about, because the idea that Bitcoin or any of these other cryptocurrencies that are different from Bitcoin in a variety of different ways are just some algorithm ignores the fact that they are curated and programmed by human beings who are constantly updating those programs over time. Mm-hmm. Unlike the dollar, where you're lucky if you get some new security feature put in once every 20 years, I mean, the government money doesn't get updated in any meaningful fashion, whereas with Bitcoin and these other cryptocurrencies, they've changed some of them over time. There's more coming up here. You can join us on Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. Dial toll free to bring up whatever you want. Our number is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. It's 855-450-3733. And you can join us online. Head over to freetalklive.com. and enjoy the features that we've got for you there. They're completely free. Once again, that's freetalklive.com. As we continue here, do want to remind you about freetalklive.com's AMP program. You can join us over at amp.freetalklive.com. It's $5 a month with PayPal or credit card, or if you want, you can send Bitcoin Core to the AMP program. Just head over to amp.freetalklive.com. You'll get perks like access to the AMP-only call-in lines, the AMP-only podcast, and more. So head on over to amp.freetalklive.com. Makes a big difference for us when you do it, and it helps us get on more radio stations around the country and bring new internet listeners on board with the ideas of freedom. Once again, that's AMP, ampamp.freetalklive.com. More about the attack against Bitcoin by HuffPo, Huffington Post's Robert Kuttner, who claims that it's a hoax. He says that economists like Milton Friedman and Friedrich Hayek, who are generally considered libertarian-minded folks, advocated putting the money supply on autopilot. Now, I don't know exactly what he means when he says that. I think he means letting the market handle it, but I don't intimately know of Friedman and Hayek's works and writings, but generally I would think that they would want the marketplace to handle money. Which, of course, cryptocurrencies are a great example of the market of money. That, as you pointed out earlier, Will, there's no regulation, basically. So anybody who wants to can get into cryptocurrencies. Anybody who wants to copy the code of one of the existing cryptos can copy it and then tweak it and release their own and try to compete.
It's simpler even than that. You know, James Lovejoy didn't write the Vertcoin algorithm. The Vertcoin algorithm was a fork off of Litecoin. When they wrote an ASIC for Litecoin, Vertcoin was forked off of Litecoin by people who didn't want an ASIC mined coin. And then it just lay dormant. It just never went anywhere. That happened in 2014. Mm-hmm. Then in 2016, James Lovejoy came along, teenager, like 16, 17 years old, genius. Decided that he didn't like ASIC mining. He started mining Bitcoin when he was like 12, and you could mine it on your computer, and it got harder and harder and more expensive, and he decided he didn't like that. So he went, and he basically went to the people who were over the Vertcoin coin and was like, look, man, I want to take this over. And they were like, all right, here you go. And sold it to him.
Because they figured it was dead.
Yeah. And he took it from something that was worth five zeros and an eight in front of it to something that's worth about $8 a coin now.
Wow.
And
it's incredible.
In 2 years' time. And, I mean,
because he didn't have to ask anyone's permission.
Ask anybody's permission. Just a smart kid went and asked these guys. And like you said, you were like, all you got to do is copy the source code. You don't even have to do that. You can go to the graveyard of tens of thousands of failed coins that are out there.
Bring one back to
life.
And
literally buy one from the developers and bring it back to life if you have the ability.
Incredible. So he claims if that policy, he's talking about the policy of money on autopilot. If that policy had been in effect when the financial collapse of 2008 occurred and the economy had been left to the tender mercies of the invisible hand, all of the banks would have gone bust and the economy, instead of experiencing the Great Recession, would have been in total collapse. Well, okay. First of all, if the policy of money in the United States was hands-off, then you wouldn't have probably had the financial collapse in 2008. It was the government who created the interest rates and the situation that allowed these banks to use fractional reserve banking to basically create money out of thin air and loan to people. Because that's one of the perks of being a bank, is you're basically, you know, all these different banks out there, they're essentially franchises of the Federal Reserve. I mean, they may have different names, they may have different operators and different board members, but ultimately they all got to play by the same Federal Reserve System rules.
Yep. And they all report to the same guy at the top.
Right. So would it have been such a terrible thing if there was a hands-off policy? Well, I would say we'd been better off because the recession never would have happened. But even if it had, their way they wanted to get out of it was by printing more money, right? The quantitative easing, as they called it, when they gave a bunch of money to GM and the auto companies and the banks. I mean, it was just they solved the problem only by kicking the can further down the road. The economic reckoning is going to come at some point. Going on, he claims Ben Bernanke is a Friedman enthusiast who was the chairman of the Federal Reserve. I mean, that's what I'm saying. This guy is just a straight up He's just straight up lying here.
Oh my God, that was so funny. I got choked on my uvula.
Right. Ben Bernanke, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, acknowledged a hands-off policy was the opposite of what was needed. Well, duh, he's the chairman of the Federal Reserve in the same way that Greenspan, who was his predecessor, used to advocate for gold and silver way back in the day. He changed his tune as soon as he got power in his hands, and he's now still acts like he's got power in his hands. So going on, he says, so the next time the wizards of speculation produce yet another financial collapse, who are you going to call? Bitcoin? Sorry, there's nobody home. Meaning that there is no one to call it Bitcoin. That's probably the only true statement he's made in the article so far, is that there's no customer service line. There's no Bitcoin company. There's nobody. There's no organization behind it except for the individuals who choose to mine it and the individuals who choose to program it. He finally says, I realize I'm an awkward company here. The CEO of JP Morgan Chase, Jamie Dimon, who helped bring us the financial collapse, doesn't like Bitcoin. The big banks don't like the competition, right?
That's actually true.
Yeah. Dimon said, quote, no government will ever support a virtual currency that goes around borders and doesn't have the same controls. It's not going to happen, unquote. And we did read Dimon's comments at the time when he made them. The article says, Dimon's right, the world's central bankers should shut down virtual currencies as both an invitation to money laundering and as a threat to monetary stability. Well, first of all, the central bankers cannot shut down cryptocurrency. I mean, they would if they could.
Whatever, Chicken Little.
Whatever they could do to stop cryptocurrency, they're going to do it. But they can't.
Henny penny, man. It's henny penny.
It's the sky is falling.
Yeah, man. Ah, the sky is falling. The sky is falling. Oh, no. Help me. Help me. Help me.
Right.
Whatever.
When
dude.
He says a threat to monetary stability, does he mean it's a threat to the government currencies being able to print as much as they want?
If it is good.
Yeah, because there's no monetary stability out there. All you got to do is look at what $100, like you were explaining earlier, Johnson, what does $100 get you at the grocery store today versus 20 years ago versus 20 years before that?
Now, let's be fair, though. That's not true. You say there's no monetary stability, and I would say that there is monetary stability. The monetary has stably gone down for the last 100 years. It's been a very steady decline for the last 100 years.
I don't know if that's the right word, though, stable for a decline. I'm not sure if you can twist it that far.
A steady, not stable.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's steady. It's a pretty straight line.
Some central banks, he says, such as the Bank of Japan, are planning to create official digital currencies for cheap or free transactions, but in a context of regulated monetary policy. Europe has long had a less whiz-bang version of this known as gyro transfers, or giro, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, G-I-R-O, in which people instruct their banks to make payments on their behalf to vendors' banks rather than writing checks. And if the issue is more competition, the remedy is to break up the big banks, not to return to a digitized version of 19th century boom and bust credit creation. I may agree with Dimon on Bitcoin. I agreed with Steve Bannon on not going to nuclear war with North Korea, but that doesn't mean I support either Bannon's racism or Dimon's predatory banking. Finally, he says, in sum, we should be hardly surprised that Bitcoin is on a wild speculative ride. That's the essence of privatized credit creation. And if you think this gambling is zero-sum and victimless, then he says you should Google the panics of various
different credit?
Years.
What the hell is he talking about? Credit creation? What credit?
Yeah, he's likening credit to cryptocurrency.
I don't get it. Is my credit score going up because I own some Litecoin?
No.
Is he talking about? Like, in one sentence, he says it's useless. You know, like, you can't use it. You can't buy stuff with it. Well, you can buy stuff with credit. So, how does he keep conflating the two? I mean, does he think that the readers are just stupid?
Obviously. I mean, he has misinformed on so many different aspects.
It's not even misinformed. They're in no way, credit and cryptocurrencies are in no way related whatsoever.
Correct. Not at all. Cryptocurrencies are a digital thing that you can pass between people. And if you loan that thing out to somebody, you better trust the person that you're loaning it to.
For real.
Because there's no way that you can call it back.
Exactly.
It's impossible to do that with I guess Bitcoin changed the rules. But most cryptocurrencies, it's impossible to call it back. The toll-free number tonight, if you want to join us here, 855-450-FREE like freedom. But as they say, you know, the old saying, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. cryptocurrencies are solidly within the then they fight you phase, because if they meant nothing, if cryptocurrencies were just this little digital trinket, then people like this wouldn't be running, you know, full page articles attacking it, because the banking gods are very threatened by this and they're scared, and they should be. Hour number three is coming up here. We're going to talk about the 70s. We'll go back in time with Johnson in moments. It's Free Talk Live.
Is your storage food wasting away under the stairs? Can you actually cook with your long-term stored food? Let Chef Keith Snow of Harvest Eating teach you to make gourmet meals from cheap ingredients in his new online course, Food Storage Feast, with dozens of videos, printable recipes, and professional knowledge. Don't just store food, store skills so you can eat well before and after the apocalypse. Get your skills today at foodstoragefeast.com. Prepare like a Boy Scout and eat like a king, and whatever you do, don't get caught with your pantry down.
Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. We're launching into the third hour of the program. As always, you're invited to join us here. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. With you in the studio here tonight, you've got me, Ian.
And Johnson.
And Will.
And Skype in at Skype username lrn.fm if you want to join us and bring up whatever you want. Also, toll-free number, 855-450-FREE. Johnson, we're moving on from cryptocurrency here tonight, though, of course, if you wanted to call in about that, you're certainly always welcome to call in about anything you want to discuss. But, Johnson, you had a story to go back to the American dream of the 1970s?
That's right. The lesson in critical thinking here about the American dream, essentially.
Yeah, tell me about that. Where's it coming from?
So it's coming from martharush.org. I found it on some sort of a libertarian-ish, either Reddit or you know, some news sharing site, I think. Might have been. Also, I might have found it on somebody's Facebook. I have no idea.
Okay,
I just thought it was interesting.
It.
Yeah. And I'm friends with a lot of like-minded people.
Got it.
So this article starts out with a picture of this person's parents' home circa 1979, which is actually interesting because it looks remarkably like what my house looked like when I was a child as well. So, the question it asks right up front is, are Americans' lives getting worse, or does it just seem that way? One of our core responsibilities as high school teachers is to help our students develop critical thinking skills, to learn to question assumptions and challenge common sense. It's something that we humans are bad at, as a rule, for all sorts of complex psychological reasons. We're much too easily influenced by what other people say, and we tend to seek information that supports our biases. Still, we can and must do better. As teachers, we need to incorporate critical thinking into all of our lessons. I'm presuming here that this Martha Rush site is probably dedicated to, you know, yep, articles about helpful things for teachers. What got me thinking about this challenge this week was a quote in the New York Times story. In a New York Times story, the mayor of Oshkosh, Wisconsin, stated what many believe to be true about our economy today. People are working similar jobs to what their parents did, but are not able to maintain the same lifestyle. This is taken as a given in our political discourse, that our standard of living has fallen from our parents' generation. It's practically part of our national mythology. It wasn't questioned in the article. But has our standard of living really fallen?
It's an interesting question.
Every year I explain to my econ students what life was really like for my family in the 1970s and for typical American families in the 1950s. But it would be interesting to take that lesson one step further. This year I'm going to have them calculate, what would it cost to replicate my parents', or better yet, their grandparents', standard of living today? Do today's household really need to work two jobs to do it? Let's start with a few basic facts. Facts we seem to have collectively forgotten. When my dad was my age, 50, and this is again from the perspective of the author, it was 1979. Here are a few things you might remember about that time if you grew up in a similarly middle-class, college-educated family in the 1970s. Let's take off the rose-colored glasses. We had no computer or internet. We had no video game system. We had no stereo system, just a simple record player. We had no cell phones. We had one house phone with no fancy features, like call waiting. We had one TV, but no cable and no fancy surround sound. We had no central air conditioning. We had no microwave. We had one car, a late model Chevy Impala with broken air conditioning. Our house, which seemed large at the time, was 1,900 square feet.
Okay.
My brother and I played rec league sports. We had no traveling teams. We ate basic 70s meals, meaning no fancy produce, never heard of kiwi or cilantro, and usually ground beef or chicken, not steak or fish. I didn't know you could buy spinach fresh, and organics? Forget it. We rarely ate out, even at McDonald's, and it was a big deal when we did. We only used long distance to call our grandparents. We went to the mall once a year to buy a handful of new clothes, and the rest of my clothes were hand-me-downs and no designer stuff. Our vacations were once a year, always by car, and usually to a rented cabin on a lake. We thought we were living large when we got a color TV and a dishwasher.
Right.
So what would it cost to live at my grandparents' standard of living now? I ran the calculations based on buying their house at its current market value, about $500,000, with 20% down, buying a new Chevy Impala, and budgeting $800 a month for groceries for a family of four. And yes, I included property taxes, heating bills, and basic health insurance. My best estimate, it would require a pre-tax income of around $60,000 a year. Yes, despite the huge increase in housing costs, $60,000 a year. That's just $1,000 more than the household median income in this country, meaning the typical American household could probably afford my parents' 1970s lifestyle, and they could afford it on much less in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where you can buy a 1,900 square foot house for about $70,000.
Okay.
So why are we so convinced that our standard of living has fallen? I think it's because we are simply incapable of making these kinds of comparisons on a casual basis. We can't fathom what it would be like to live without the conveniences and extravagances we have today. No cable TV, no cell phone. Are you asking us to go back to the Dark Ages? If we were to have an honest dialogue about our economic problems and potential solutions, we need to acknowledge that the typical American standard of living has improved dramatically. At least in terms of the stuff compared to our parents' generation.
It's well, that much is true. Mm-hmm. And it, a lot of the things that was it a she who wrote this? Or
I believe so, yes.
A lot of the stuff the article mentions is technology, right? They talk about TVs, they talk about phones, they talk about computers, and this has had this particular area has had a tremendous increase in effectiveness, efficiency, you know, lowering costs, increasing the power and the you know the ability to use these devices, increasing their proliferation across the United States. So there's no doubt that technology is far better today than it was in the 1970s. But the costs of living have more to do than just you know what kind of phone you have or what technology that you have access to. And I think the suggestion when people say that their standard of living is different or worse today, I think they're kind of looking at overall, the idea that the amount of money they're making doesn't keep up with inflation, for instance.
Right.
And so, you know, the government keeps printing money, but the wages that people take home do not rise equal to the inflation. And so they tend to fall behind, which means that over time, even if you're making the same amount or even slightly more, you may not be able to buy as much, even though the phone you buy is better than it was 10 years ago.
Well, like a simple thing I would say would be like work boots. Okay. I've lived in a family where work boots were a normal thing to buy since I was a little bitty boy.
Yeah.
The wages in my family have never really gone in a northern fashion. You know, factory work. Well, the factories that my grandfather worked at are all shut down. But like the mechanic work that my other grandfather used to do is still paying about the same wage that it did in the 80s.
That's
to
bad.
Work for Toyota. Yeah. It's maybe gone up 10%, but a price of the Red Wing work boots that he wore has gone from $49 to $69 when he was buying them to $150 to $200 plus today. So the costs have risen by 2 to three times what they were in that 20-year stretch, whereas the income level for most jobs on the lower end of the spectrum, at least the economic spectrum, those wages have stagnated. You know, like right. Minimum wage when I was 14 years old was $5.50 an hour. Mm-hmm. 25 years later, 30 years later, it's $2 more.
I think the point,
but
though, that this
everything
article
costs more.
I think the point that this article makes is that, you know, maybe, and I don't know if this is true of the boots, but I mean, of a lot of things. Like, for example, maybe the new Red Wing boots have like a certain type of safety toe that's a composite or something like that. Or that kind
steel
of thing.
Toe no, no, no. Steel toe.
Think about it from this perspective. First of all, Will, not everything's more expensive. Some things got cheaper, right. Like technology gets cheaper for what you're paying mm-hmm. for it. Certain manufacturing processes get better, but there's only so many people that need work boots. Whereas with phones, everybody supposedly mm-hmm. feels like they need a phone. So there's more development, there's more money going into that, more costs being reduced, more coming up. Free Talk Live. Dial in toll free to bring up anything you want. Here our number is 855-450-FREE like freedom. It's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype as well. It's Skype username lrn.fm. With you in studio tonight, it's Ian.
And Johnson.
And Will.
As we continue here, you can of course bring up anything that you want. We're talking about the standard of living. Is it lower today than it was in the 1970s? The argument from the article you're sharing, Johnson, thus far at least, is that it's actually higher because technology. But aren't they leaving out some other important things? I mean, if we look at the technology, there's no doubt it's way better and cheaper than it ever has been.
I don't know that their argument is necessarily that they're saying that it's higher. I just think that they're saying that you could potentially do that same exact style of living on the, you know, like the argument nowadays is that you can't live on, you know, the you can't live on a, you know,
a single
medium,
person's
median.
Basically what they're saying is that you can't live the same way that on a median income from the 70s in today. And his argument is that that's true if you live like we live in, if you live like it's the 1970s.
Right.
They're yes. saying you can live for a decent price today like they did in the 1970s.
As long as you live like it's the 1970s. So you, as long as you don't take part in any of the technological advances that make it the 2012, right, right. 2025,
so that would put you behind the ball to some extent then, right?
Yes. Basically, if you live like, if you go buy a rotary phone and you don't have an answering machine and you get MCI, if you can find them anymore, and you get like a regular old school long distance, no cell phones, no computers, no video game, no nothing like that. You just give up. You become what do they call them? Anarcho primitivists.
Right, right.
If you become a primitivist, then you can live like our parents did in the 70s. You can have a comfortable middle class income on $60,000 so long as you give up everything that makes it the modern day.
And the funny thing is too, that I think the article made an error because there's a star right at the end of the article that says the article originally stated that $60,000 was the individual median income. It is actually the household median income. So the median income now is actually $60,000 for a household. So it still would require a two-person income to live
to live
that
like
way.
The 70s. Right. Okay, so she's okay. Also, do want to let you know about Bitcoin.com. So if you are new to cryptocurrency, you heard us talking about it earlier here tonight, and you want to learn the basics, just get over to Bitcoin.com. They've got some really good introductory information there, plus an excellent news site to keep you in the loop about cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. Go to news.bitcoin.com to find the news site, and then there's a bunch of other aspects to Bitcoin.com. So just go there, learn more, and check it out. You're reading from a teacher's blog, and she is writing about the 1970s, comparing the life then and the costs then to the costs now. Do continue.
So, I mean, we're basically at the end of this article. She says, I think this is she, if we're going to have an honest dialogue about our economic problems and potential solutions, we need to acknowledge that the typical American standard of living has improved dramatically, at least in terms of stuff.
That's
compared
true.
To our parents' generation, it's our expectations that have changed. We'll be doing our students a service if we help them to learn that these kinds of questions and to seek supporting facts for themselves rather than just accepting what the people assume to be true. hopefully they'll find it interesting too. And that's basically it. I mean,
so she is arguing that on the basis of stuff,
yeah,
the standard of living is higher, meaning more choices, as she pointed out, mm-hmm. in the food that we can purchase, more choices in the technology that we right. have access to, the entertainment right. that we have.
I mean, I definitely remember the early 80s, so I definitely remember, you know, growing up in a time when, you know,
when MTV played music videos.
Yeah, yeah. When, you know, and when arcades were just starting to become a thing.
Arcades
yeah.
were awesome.
You know, yep. like
when, and now they're gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Mostly. There's like these big arcades. Didn't you go to one recently? Was that in New York City? Somebody
I did.
Told me.
I went to a Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, and that's like an adult arcade,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Where they serve alcohol.
Yeah, that's right.
And the games are like... You actually
they do
told
it
me
on a card. It's like a card thing. So you're buying like your tokens or whatever. Like not mm-hmm. really, they're not physical tokens. It's a,
so
like
you a swipe a card?
Yeah, it's all yeah, on the card now. No more tokens.
And wow. points. What's actually kind of cool is the tickets. You know how you would win tickets? And you'd yeah. have those huge things right, of right. tickets or whatever. Well, the tickets go on the card too.
Really?
So that's kind of
that I haven't seen.
Yeah, so that's actually was
is this still
cool
the chintzy toys that they give you? Or are they like?
No, actually, some of them were pretty cool. I mean, what I won yeah, and then promptly lost, and I was very disappointed with that, was after our one little day of play, was the world's smallest Rubik's Cube, which I kept in my pocket, and I was going to bring it to put it on my desk at work.
That is a chintzy
I
toy.
Dropped it out. It was actually kind of cool.
It's a
it was
brand
a
name.
It was a Rubik's Cube, working right? Rubik's Cube that yeah. was like 1 inch by 1 inch, not even. I don't know. It was very cool.
Usually at these arcades, I mean, just
it
like
costs like 9,000 tickets.
I mean, for what we did, and like we were only there for like an hour.
Oh wow!
Would you so spend? That was like after 10, didn't you say you only spent like $10 on a card or something like that?
Yeah, something
give
like that.
Give me $5 like and some ski ball, baby. I'll win you some tickets.
You would love the arcade out in Laconia.
Yeah,
there is this really.
Oh yeah, because all '80s games.
Yeah,
oh.
yeah. It's like a museum basically, but you can play. Right. Like you know, oh, most museums, wow. you
it's
can't touch anything.
The,
but
what the largest
where's
arcade
Laconia
in New England or something like that? Or is
it's
it
a monster.
World?
I don't
where's
know.
Where's Laconia? It's, my kids are out of school, yo. Like you're giving me ideas for stuff to go do.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's on the east side of the state, so it's about an hour and a half.
Close to Manchester.
North.
Northeast of that. It's more like east of Concord. Anyway, it's. Called Fun Spot. I've been there one time, and if you spent my girlfriend and I at the time, we spent $20 and just got a load of tokens, and we were there for a couple few hours just playing games. We had more tokens than we really even wanted to play.
Oh,
with.
It'll set me back a bill because I've got five kids that want to play video games, and then I want to play too. But you know,
oh yeah, these are going to take you back. All these games are going to take you back, dude. There's games
that
got
some Burger Time, baby.
There's games there. I bet they've got that one too. There's games there that are older than me. Right, like they have working versions of like Pong that go back before 1980.
So I'm super
excited. All the Atari TSR 2600 games.
There's a new thing that has happened this year with these mini games that you can get at like you know big box stores that are like maybe 3 feet by a foot and a half, maybe, and just you know size wise, I don't really know what you would compare like something about this big to, you know.
What is it?
I don't know. So they now have these miniature pool tables. Like, I don't know if there's table tennis, but the one my girlfriend got for us, that I haven't had the chance to test it out yet, but she got us this mini air hockey table that's like, you know, you unfold it or whatever, but it's tiny. It's
mm-hmm. like this. But it's got the little holes that blow air through.
Yeah, so it's like this tiny little air hockey table, and it looks like it's going to be really fun. I don't know. And they also had a mini pool table that's like, you know, again, like, you know, 3 feet by 2 feet or something like that. Not even.
It's not for small children. It's like
it could be for
be
small children. It could
anybody?
Be for small children, but it mm-hmm. is intended for use by anybody.
My brother-in-law, my older brother had one of the mini pool tables. It's about this big. It's mm-hmm. just and it was the same thing. It was you could convert it into the hockey.
Right.
You're going to have a blast. Yeah. You know? It is so much fun.
Yeah. All right. More coming up here. If you want to talk technology, the standard of living, because I think there's more to say here if we want to continue.
Or if you want to nerd out with me and Johnson.
Yeah, we can talk arcades. We can talk arcades. I'm down with that. I think I had something related to gaming. Oh, yeah. The new gaming is a disease thing. Gaming disorder article that just came out today. There's more coming up here. It's Free Talk Live. Ross Ulbricht was convicted in early 2015 of running the infamous Silk Road Underground Market. The Silk Road was a gift to humanity and helped reduce the harms brought on by drug prohibition. For this good deed, Ross has been sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. Now, an appeal is Ross's only chance, and he needs your support. Please visit FreeRoss.org, where you can contribute via various methods, including Bitcoin. Visit FreeRoss.org. That's FreeRoss.org. This is Free Talk Live. You can bring up whatever you want. The toll-free number here is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. We flashed back to the 1970s in a story from Johnson and talking about the standard of living. Is it actually up or down? Well, it depends on how you look at it, I think, is really the answer to that question. Do you have access to more things now? Yes. Are many of those things cheaper than they were in the past? Yes, certainly when it comes to technology, they are. But Will, you gave an example of work boots that are more expensive now.
Triple the cost than they were in the past.
And you gave another example of how the people who need those work boots are working in jobs where they don't really get paid much more than they did 20 years ago.
10% increase, maybe.
So there's a lot of ways where it's harder to live these days. Let's continue the discussion. You're welcome to join us here. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE like freedom. That also brought us into a discussion about arcades, just because we were talking about the past and, you know, things that we all lived through here. All of us are in our mid to late 30s on the show here tonight. So we grew up in the 1980s in the heyday of arcades. I was too young to really have any meaningful money to spend in arcades, but I sure did spend a lot of time watching people play in arcades at that time. And of course, now we hardly barely even have anything that resemble arcades anymore, although there are the fancy sort of adult arcades where alcohol is served. I remember going to one in Texas, like, I don't know, must have been like 20 years ago, even when arcades were still kind of around, that had one of these newer models where they, you know, it was clearly targeted at adults. They had like a DJ playing at the, you know, the arcade.
Cell phones killed the arcade, I think.
Why? Because you can play video games on them?
I get a video game right here, man. Any game I want.
Sure, sure. I don't know if cell phones.
I would say home game systems were a little bit earlier than...
You had home game systems back then. You know, you could get Ataris,
not as good,
you could get Nintendos. True, true. Arcades were superior to like the home Nintendo system usually.
And now the TVs and the speakers and all that stuff is...
Well, the first time I ever saw 3D gaming was at the arcade.
Right.
Virtua Fighter, baby.
Oh, yeah. That was a
Virtua
big one.
Virtua Fighter was awesome.
Yes.
So, Stefan, who had called in earlier here tonight, had actually sent a message confirming. He says FunSpot, the arcade I was talking about in New Hampshire, is the biggest in the nation.
Okay, in the nation. Really?
That's what he claims. I don't know if that's true, but it is a multi-story arcade.
The claim.
It is more than one story.
So was the arcade that I went to in New York City. So.
Yeah, but how many games did they actually have?
A whole lot.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Well, I don't know. That's what he claims. I'm not making the same claim. Yeah. I'm just telling you what he said.
Yeah. There are a lot. I would say that there are a lot at FunSpot, but I don't know if it's the largest. I mean,
I would be surprised.
Like, I've been to other arcades
that
are like very similar in size.
Yeah. I'd be surprised if it was the largest, but it's definitely a fun place to go if you love old arcade games.
I don't know if they're still there, but there used to be this huge arcade down on just below the boardwalk in Daytona Beach that we used to go to when we would go to Daytona all the time. It was a beautiful spot, and it had like the punching bag thing, and you know, tons and tons of games. Ski ball, that's my game right there. Ski ball.
My mom lives down in Delaware, and on Rehoboth Beach, there's a series of arcades. There's a bunch of different like carnival kind of stuff and arcades as well, like several of them strung together. And I mean, if you put all that together, it would
That'd
be
more
gigantic.
Square footage.
Yeah, but huge.
Let's go to Joshua. He's calling on Skype. Joshua, you're on Free Talk Live. Hello, you all right?
Yep, I'm here.
Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the topic I'd like to bring up today is on cryptocurrency.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
It's about a brand new cryptocurrency that I think is going to swipe the floor with all the rest.
All right, let's hear it.
Especially when it comes to adopt it. So it's called the VBC coin, which stands for violence-backed currency.
So this is the government issuing this one. Is that what you're saying?
No. This is us.
Who's us?
And the
you
way this
are involved?
Works is Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to be putting this thing out here shortly, probably within the next couple months.
Uh-huh.
And the way it works is it's built on blockchain technology, but it has an infrastructure of 525,000 juggalos that will go through and enforce the use of the crypto if a business doesn't accept it.
Okay. All right. Juggalos. Well, they need work, so I guess that's good news.
What is a juggalo?
There's a million out there. We only got 25,000 on.
Let's explain what a juggalo is, because Johnson just made the point that probably people out there listening that don't know what this term is.
What is a juggalo? I don't know. I'm down with the clown.
A juggalo.
Are you down with the psycho?
A juggalo is a fan of the, I don't know if you can call them a band, but ICP, Insane Clown Posse.
What are magnets?
The juggalos are their followers, the people who are obsessed with listening to their music. They have been, I guess, categorized as a gang in certain jurisdictions by governments, for instance.
They were followed by the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security and labeled as a possible domestic terrorist organization.
Didn't they come out as Christians a couple of years ago?
Yes, they believe in miracles. They don't believe in questioning the wonder of nature.
Like, they had some of the most...
They sued the federal government, though, or the FBI.
And they lost that case recently, right. I think, over their gang affiliation.
The designation is here
designation,
to stay.
Yeah. So that's who the juggalos are. Anyway, Joshua, go ahead with your pitch for this new coin where juggalos will enforce that people must accept it.
Yeah, so so we took some of the framework of Dash. So about 5% of all the transaction fees that go through will come back, and they'll be used to fund the juggalos that go through when someone won't accept the currency. So if you go to your local business, you're like, hey, I'd like to buy that hamburger using VBC. And they're like, well, we don't accept it here. You quietly, step away and say, okay. And then you go to the website, you punch it up, say, hey, Broadway Burger isn't the VBC.
Send in the juggalos.
All of a sudden, we got five juggalos that come in and make them, see differently.
Spray Faygo all over the place.
That's a great idea.
I mean, it works the same way with the American currency. Uh-huh. If some place won't accept it, then we'll just go in there and bomb them or whatever. But this is a little nicer. They're friendly clown faces.
Well, there you go. When is this currency going to be coming out?
Probably in the next couple months, we're still working on some bugs and, make sure that we got a secure messaging forum for all the juggalos and trying to get the other, 475,000 on board so we have a full million.
Should call it every city. Malenko coin.
What's that?
Great Malenko. It's one of the clowns of the.
But then we.
That's a juggalo?
We might have to get some copyright stuff.
What about copyright? What? I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, if we do Malenko coin, we might have to deal with some copyright infringement stuff. So,
I see.
But VBC, it's out there. Every government uses it, so we got it.
Well, that is adorable.
You don't think that they would back you? I mean, I know the computers do require, some knowledge of electromagnetic fields and whatnot, so it might not work out very well if we're looking for direct authorization by, ICP themselves, because they don't quite understand how magnets work. I don't know how the developers are going to feel about, having to understand how all this stuff works.
You're referencing a song, an actual song by this group, ICP.
Yeah, Miracles.
In which they actually, one of the lines is, magnets, how do they work?
Yes.
Or something like that.
Yeah, it's about not believing in science and just accepting that things work the way they do. And why do you need to understand any of that?
It's just about being stupid, basically. It's about, accepting that you don't know anything and not wanting to learn anything about it.
Well, and just, nature has wonder, man. Why you got to question it?
So there you go.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
It's pretty dumb.
And I got...
You should see the lyrics.
I got one last question.
Yeah.
Will liberty-minded accept the juggalo currency of the VBC coin?
You better.
Maybe.
Or else...
I'll let you know.
Thanks for the call tonight, Joshua.
Come say that to my face.
I'm spiting words.
Liberty Minded, by the way, is where you can go to get the official Free Talk Live gear and other cool t-shirts and such. You can go to libertyminded.com. You're always coming out with new designs too, Johnson.
That's right. Maybe I need to have a nice,
a juggalo
inspired design.
There you go. VB coin or else. The toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE, like freedom. Check out libertyminded.com. Not only can you pay with the old money, but you can also pay with a variety of cryptocurrencies. And again, that's libertyminded.com. There's more coming up. You can join us on the radio. This is Free Talk Live. Moments remain here in this episode. You may still join us, though. The phones are open, as always, at 855-450-FREE, like freedom. 855-450-3733. We've got Skype as well, so please Skype on in here to join us. Skype username lrn.fm. And let's talk nutritional supplements for a moment. Over 60% of Americans take a nutritional supplement, and for good reason. Nutrient depletion of our soil, coupled with dependence on processed foods, has left most people deficient in essential nutrients. But where do you start? If you visit a naturopath, you'll likely be told a cheap vitamin mineral supplement doesn't cut it. You'll also need probiotics, enzymes, antioxidants, and other nutrients. And by the time it's all said and done, you're buying five bottles of product and spending $150 a month. If that's a situation you've experienced, then you need to know about Whole Food Multi-Complete. For 15 years, Whole Food Multi-Complete has been quietly providing what the big guys won't, the perfect blend of supplements in a single product. They've taken the expense and complexity out of following a complete supplement program. Visit SimplifyMySupplements.com. You can learn more there. Use coupon code FTL and you'll get 10% off your order. SimplifyMySupplements.com. Again, coupon code 10%, satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. As we go to your calls and thoughts, Sarah is in New Mexico. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Sarah.
Yes, I just want to mention that I helped put up like 150 brand new bus shelters here in Albuquerque ever since I came to Albuquerque.
How did you help put up a bus shelter?
Well, you know, those actually those bus shelters cost like $10,000 a piece,
yeah.
The real metal frame ones. But I spoke up at the city council meetings about at least 50 times concerning our bus stick stop. All we get is a stick for a bus stop.
Yeah.
Basically, she went and lobbied for the state to pay for something, so that means she did it.
So you didn't actually, like, swing a hammer. You didn't swing a hammer or, like, carry a piece of metal or stick it in the ground or do any actual work. You just went and talked to some city council members?
Well, then I put that the TV show about the buses, and I complained about the bus stops. We have no stops. All we get is a stick.
Mm-hmm.
And we sit there and have the sun beat on us and the rain fall on us. So it was actually quite a bit of work at the city council meeting because they say let you sign up at 5, but they let you speak at 6:15 or 6:30.
So that's work to you is to sign a piece of paper and then wait around until you have 2 minutes to speak?
Well, you know what? That is pretty much a work because you're. If you don't pay attention, you blow your chance. If they call you, you're in a bathroom. You don't pay attention. That's a lot of work, and it was work coming back.
That is
back
a lot of work, boy. Oh boy, you are just slaving away out there for the good of the people.
You see who she's talking to, as well. You know, like
you mean you.
You as well. Like that type of stuff is our lives. Like we've been doing that as like. A profession for the last decade.
Well, it's only a profession if you get paid for it.
Yeah, we don't get paid.
It's a hobby. It's a hobby. It's an obsession. It's something that we do because it's a labor of love. Yeah. So we wouldn't call it work.
How do you live? Your show, I mean, you have to pay mortgage. You live in a house. You have to buy food. Who pays for that, though?
We earn our keep. So
through other means,
yeah, we don't earn anything by going and doing city council lobbying.
No,
that's not really work. That's just something you do because you care about, you know, the community and or an issue or whatever. But being on the radio is to some extent work. I mean, it's not like swinging a hammer, but it does have responsibilities and you do have to be in a place for a certain amount of time and you have to do a thing that if you fail at it. People aren't going to listen. So, and then you're done with that particular. If nobody listens, then
you don't get paid.
You know, you don't get anything later on. Nobody wants to advertise with you, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's the advertising that brings in revenue into this radio program.
Well, the thing is that the
amplifiers.
I was out there because we have three new bus stations now, one on the west side, Westgate Station, and then...
Yeah, we don't need to know where the stations are. Nobody, you know, we don't live where you do. So what was your point? What was the point of your call tonight? Was it just to brag?
Ugh.
Well, the thing about it is that I did manage to accomplish certain things to putting in new bus shelters.
Well, get that lady an award.
Is it rude to yawn on the air? I don't mean fake but, yawning either.
I mean, me going down to the, I mean, speaking up at the council meeting over and over again, 50 times. And
so this was a total backpatting call. This was, you were calling to talk about how great you were. You want us to recognize your efforts to provide shelter for the bus riders of Albuquerque and get you, you know, some kind of recognition for that. Congratulations, Sarah. You did it.
Well, what I'm saying is that, you know, we do volunteer work. You know, I know that you think it's worthless, but I think it's a great value. You know, the
retire. Yeah, I mean, you didn't have to pay for it, so like you got all these free bus shelters.
Hold on. And I don't mean hold cryptocurrency. I mean hold your phone, lady. You just said that we think that volunteer work is useless, and that's not true. I think that what at least what I feel is going out and begging the government to spend somebody else's money on something that's my pet project or my pet issue, I think that is pointless. That is something that is unnecessary and unproductive and doesn't really contribute anything to society. Volunteer work, that's different. Volunteering your time for others or to say, I don't know, take your own money, your own time, and go fix a potholder on the street in front of your house. That kind of volunteer work, you know what? I think that provides a great service.
Absolutely.
But those aren't the same thing. They're in no way analogous to each other.
Thank you for the call tonight, Sarah. The toll-free number, if you want to join us, is 855-450-FREE, like freedom. That's 855-450-3733. So do we
I mean, all those thieves out there are just volunteering their time. You know, taking money from people. They're just, you know, they're just going out for free.
It's hard work to stick a knife in somebody's
back. And no one is paying them until they take the money. Yeah. I mean, they just, yeah, it doesn't even make sense.
So, do we want to talk more about the standard of living? Was there more to say about that? Because it seems to me that while life is certainly comfortable these days, people have, you know, the
new
society.
Amenities. There are new amenities that didn't exist then. You have central heat instead of a coal-burning stove. Big whoop. Who cares? That cost that you used to spend on coal or wood, the labor, the physical labor of cutting down wood, has now been transferred into $17 or $25 or $35 or $60 of your electric bill every, you know, if you live in areas where that's done.
Or oil heat.
Oil heat's just ridiculously expensive. So that's been transferred into other things. Oil heat. There's a classic example, man. In the 60s, oil heat would have cost you pennies on the dollar compared to what it does today.
Yeah. Is that right?
Absolutely, man. You would have been paying like 16 cents a gallon for your oil, not $2.50.
Yeah, but what about adjusting for inflation?
Still, right. Man, like
that's the other
a
thing.
Major difference.
Like your boots are more expensive today, but what about adjusting for inflation?
Well, the money is worthless.
That's the thing.
You know, if you that's what I was saying before we went to the break earlier in the show is, you know, if you took the value of the silver that was in $1.25, which in 1964 I think that was the minimum wage was a buck and a half.
Yeah.
If you or a buck and a quarter. If you took that dollar and a quarter worth of silver today,
that was also the last year that there were silver coins,
yes,
right?
Yes.
As far as like change the quarters and
if you took that silver today, it'd be worth more than $15. Five silver quarters is worth more than $15 today.
That's interesting.
So the minimum wage then is value wise is worth more than than what they're begging for the minimum wage to be today.
Yeah, right. And the actual minimum wage is half of that.
Exactly.
That's $7.50 or whatever.
Exactly. And the cost of living has gone up astronomically. Whereas the value of the money has gone down equally astronomically.
While, as you pointed out, some people are still getting paid just barely over what they would have made in the same position 20 years ago. And that's how you end up behind the ball, especially when people in society are sort of trained against saving. We were talking about savings on Sunday night on the show because the money disincentivizes saving because the money gets worth less over time. You have an incentive to spend the money rather than save it. And so you have all these people who can barely get by, who also don't really have any significant savings to tap into in an emergency situation. Yeah. I mean, it is bad. And that's why you see people staying at home. That's why you see young people not moving out of their parents' house.
Yeah.
It's hard to afford. It's hard to get by. And then, of course, there's also the problem with these kids went to government schools, and that has just absolutely destroyed the workforce. I mean, I was talking with the folks over at Taco Place here in New Hampshire. They can't find people who want to come to work more than 20 hours a week.
Yeah.
They just can't find. The ones that come to work want to go home all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it is crazy what they were telling me about the employee pool.
You can't find the jobs that used to exist, but you could make a decent living without a high school or a college degree anymore either.
Out of time tonight. Join us tomorrow online. In the meantime, we'll see you at freetalklive.com. Don't forget to check out libertyminded.com for Johnson and the FTL gear. This is Free Talk Live, and we're doing an after show with Robert Viglione. Robert, welcome to the program. You're one of the founders of Zencash.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Sure. Now, as I understand it, Zencash is looking to come on board as an advertiser with Free Talk Live, and apparently you guys have been purchasing advertising on different podcasts of sort of a liberty-oriented nature. Zencash is one of the myriad of competing cryptocurrencies out there who I'm sure would love to take the crown from Bitcoin Core, which is the current number one competitor out there. You know, we've talked to a lot of people on Free Talk Live, you know, Bitcoin conferences and such over the years, and there's a bunch of these cryptocurrencies out there. And so, my first question is, what is it that makes Zencash noteworthy?
Yeah. So, what I would say is, even in terms of this whole like taking the crown thing, you know, for me personally, this is all about making the world a freer, more peaceful place, and we're just one project doing that, trying to work in that direction. So I'm actually a big supporter of dozens of projects in the space, including Bitcoin. But now what makes us, unique, like what is our niche? So we're building out a privacy oriented platform, similar to some other projects. But, what I think is, interesting is we started off by taking what we think are some of the best features from across some of the best projects in the space and combining them as our starting point. And then from there, building out, a broad privacy-oriented ecosystem that is massively decentralized. In fact, I would say one of the most decentralized in the industry, with the aim of being completely censorship-resistant. That goes across a whole bunch of feature sets. You know, we use zero-knowledge cryptography, just like, you know, that we inherited from Zcash. Right. We have a governance system, a treasury model, kind of like Dash. Okay. But we're actually baking it into our protocol, so it's truly censorship resistant. So whereas Dash has master nodes that are external to the protocol, we're actually building the voting system into the protocol.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, so that to me is one of the most fascinating things. And then not just doing a simple voting system, but then taking we're actually implementing game theory research into the protocol to try to solve some of the issues with democracy. That I think plague countries.
I saw in your white paper here, which I didn't read the whole thing, but I did look through it, and I saw that you guys actually used the word, I think it was voluntarism or voluntarist in there. I think that's probably going to be attractive to a number of our listeners to know that the people behind this project, or at least the people who wrote the white paper, which I presume you and a few other folks were involved in, seem to be very explicitly voluntarist. Can you comment on that?
that's exactly right. So I'm a voluntarist. Our other co-founders are. In fact, okay. I would say most of the people on our core team joined the project because they all share this common vision. I mean, really, we're trying to make the world a freer place. And we just jumped on the opportunity to use this technology to specifically work in this direction. You know, there's a lot of other projects that are, ICOs just using the technology to raise capital. There's other projects that, you know, they're using it to make bank transactions more efficient. We don't really care about that stuff. We're focusing completely on kind of the cypherpunk vision from the start.
And so you mentioned that there's some similarities to Dash and that there's a governance structure, but you take yours to the next level, actually building it into the system itself, into the protocol of of Zencash. Now, the structure, the payouts is kind of different. As I know, with Dash, 10% goes into sort of this promotional kitty that the masternodes vote on. 45% goes to the miners. 45% goes to the masternodes for every block that gets mined. And with Zencash, is it I was reading through again here. 3.5% goes to the core team, and then 5% goes to the decentralized autonomous organizations that sort of make up the community. Is that right?
Yeah, so we've actually, I'll say the white paper is a little bit obsolete and we're due for a revision because we've actually grown quite a bit since then. And what we did was we wrapped that core team amount into the treasury itself for full transparency.
I see.
In fact, we lost one of our early, founders, that our tech lead, left the project. And after he left the project, the rest of us said, well, actually, we'd prefer to move the core team payment just into the regular treasury bucket so that everyone can see what's going on. And ultimately, it'll all be voted on by the community. So what I'll say, though, is we have multiple versions of this voting mechanism. So where we are right now, which is where we were when we launched, was basically we have a ghetto forum submission process where you want to work a proposal, you can put it together, submit it to our forum so that the community has visibility, we can comment. But then ultimately, we have a foundation right now that was set up as a nonprofit in Delaware, and the board members of the foundation have been making a resource allocation decision for version one of what we're trying to do. Now, version two, which we're about to unveil, is a nice GUI, graphical user interface, so that the community can directly vote on things.
For the website for the software, like the full nodes?
Yeah, so it's for the resource allocation decisions. There's really two ways to do governance. One is how you allocate resources, and the other is how you make parameter changes to the system. We're tackling the easy problem right now, which is how you allocate resources. So version two is going to be a nice GUI system where the community can directly vote, and version three is when we actually bake it into the protocol. So that version three, I think, is the real big deal project that we have, and we're actually just starting the R&D on that with a key R&D partner. We'll be announcing in the next week or so.
Yeah, I did get the impression looking around the website and downloading the full node software that this is pretty early on. How long has Zencash been around?
It's definitely early on. We've been around for 6 months now.
Oh wow!
Right, everything. Yeah, so we're brand new in my mind. We've been on this 6 month sprint, and the organization has kind of grown exponentially. Mm-hmm. So we're actually in the middle of a bit of a reorg to just make things a little bit more efficient and kind of highlight the teams that we have operating. I think if you just look on the, actually even with our website, our logo, everything is in process of a rebrand and a reorg. So really, it's kind of cool to be on the show now, because give it a week or two and it'll be like a really nice, almost newish looking project that I think is taking their initial vision to the next level.
Cool. So I mean, that's interesting that it's so new, but yet you guys are really putting it out there, and certainly very strongly to the libertarian community. I know you were advertising, I think, on Sovereign Tech, I heard, and also Daryl Perry's Freedom or FPP Radio News. Where else are you guys going to look at for ads?
Yeah, so I was just on the Scott Horton show earlier today.
Oh, cool.
So Scott, the anti-war movement, I think, is a critical part of what we're doing as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, and even for me, that was one of the big reasons why I got into Bitcoin in the first place, was the idea of separating money from state was such an appealing way to make the world more peaceful.
Right.
If you can't print money to fight wars, you're going to fight, much less wars in the future. Mm-hmm. So that was a big thing. So supporting Scott and his efforts is really important to me personally. And you see the common thread here is we're really trying to get out there now to the libertarian community. And we were we were out there and operating for the last 6 months, but we've really just started to reach out to these communities in the last month or so with actual marketing.
Excellent. And so listeners can go to zensystem.io to learn more about Zencash. There was another aspect of this that I thought was interesting, but unfortunately I was unable to actually test it with Mark Edge because he said that the client kept crashing on him. He'd had it open, but then he couldn't get it back open. So that's why I was saying it does seem like we're still in the early days of this. I wanted to try out the messaging system. That's something else that you can do, apparently, with Zencash is send messages. You have to pay for them, though, over the blockchain, and they're encrypted. At least while they're traveling, right?
Yeah, entirely. They're completely encrypted. So we've implemented a secure messaging protocol, probably the most secure in the world, in the sense that your message is using zero-knowledge cryptography mm-hmm. over our blockchain. So there's no way that anyone can see who's sending what to whom or what you're saying within that message.
And are you aware of anything like that that exists in the other Zcash-related kind of cryptos out there?
So all it's doing, it's taking the same concept of, say, like, Zcash's, snark-based, coin transmission type of transaction, and we're just using it for a messaging system. Mm-hmm. So we just tweaked it a little bit to make that possible. So one of the best ways to use that is through our Swing wallet. So I recommend trying that.
That's the full node, right? The full node software?
It's the full node wallet.
Yeah, that's what I've got running here, and I guess Mark was having some trouble with it. It was hard to figure out, just some feedback here, it was hard to figure out how to install it on Linux. I didn't see any instructions on the site, so I ended up having to do the Windows version, but I did get that up and running. So folks can go and get involved over at zensystem.io. And you said it's only been around about 6 months. What's the price been doing over that time? I noticed it was in the $30 range the other day, but now there's been this big bloodbath, at least today when we're recording this, in all the cryptocurrencies. How's the price looking out there?
So the bloodbath actually worked out reasonably well for us.
Really?
We've kind of gained. Yeah, we're down overall, but we've gained relative to Bitcoin. Nice for our rankings. But yeah, so the price, we launched at $10. Now we're sitting at just over $40.
Okay.
So it's been pretty good. But at the same time, the market's been going crazy over the same period. So we can't really take credit for it.
Sure. Now, you do make a claim in your white paper, which is a pretty big claim. So I'm going to ask you to back it up if you can. You claim to be the world's most secure cryptocurrency network. I mean, there's a lot of networks out there. How can you possibly know for sure that yours is the most secure?
Yeah, this is actually, you just had this conversation with one of our guys on our marketing side yesterday. We're making this claim. How do we substantiate it? The way that I look at it is I start with a simple like decomposition of a blockchain into subsystems, kind of like the same way that Balaji from 21Co actually presented a paper on. So you start with the different subsystems. You've got your node architecture. You've got the developers who are actually committing comments to the code base, and you've got miners and so on. You've got people that own the coin. So my mission is to make us the most decentralized. I can't claim definitively that across every subsystem we are, but what I can say is we've just implemented our secure node system a week ago, and just in that 1 week, we've had, I think now we have 4,500 nodes operating on the network.
Now, what is the difference between a secure node and a full node?
So a secure node is a full node that has a 42 Zen stake, reference to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. it has a valid TLS certificate. So we do client to node end-to-end encryption. So that right there is different. So we're the first protocol the first blockchain to implement TLS into the protocol so that we have that client to node encryption. And then you have to have, I think it's a 92% uptime requirement. So pretty simple set of requirements to go from a full node, then you register with our system, and then we pay you to operate as a secure node. But the cool thing about the system is that I think it's a very underrated asset, and I think we'll probably see other blockchains move in similar direction in the future. Is we have 4,500 nodes already after a week of operating this system.
Wow.
So I'm not sure what Bitcoin's total number is now, but we're approaching it.
Yeah, I remember it wasn't that much more than 7,000 or 10,000 or something like that recently.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure we'll exceed that. So at least in that one dimension, I can say we're rapidly becoming one of the most decentralized, which in my mind also means resilient architectures.
Robert, what about the mining side of Zencash? How do people get involved in that?
Yeah, so we're Equihash based, so proof of work, Equihash, GPU based mining.
So somebody with a graphics card could mine Zencash.
That's exactly right. Okay. In fact, one of the next things we need to do, we're actually rewriting or about to start a project to rewrite our mining pool software because we need to decentralize mining operations next. Even us now, just by virtue of being Equihash based, we're more decentralized than ASIC based cryptocurrencies on mining, but we have to do a better job and we have to make sure that we don't have just a handful of dominant pools that then have majority of hash power.
Zcash based originally, but now expanding out to much more. It's Zencash at Zen System. Where'd you guys come up with the name Zencash?
I was in bed one day and just had a little bit of motivation while I was about to go to sleep. But I mean, the point though is we're trying to make a more peaceful, harmonious world, and I think that we wanted to retain the Z, our heritage as a ZK Snark cryptocurrency. So then I was thinking, what words would Z kind of embody our message and what we're trying to do? And Zen just popped to mind.
Perfect. All right. Well, that makes sense. Do you feel like there was something that maybe I didn't ask that you would have liked to have been asked about here?
You know, I guess what I tell people is like, we don't want, people to think everything is like, I guess, let me back up. We are an experiment. We're a 6-month-old experiment. So I'm definitely don't want to get out there and tell everyone we're the best investment in the world. Mm-hmm. I think anyone who does that is very irresponsible. But what I do want to encourage people is, don't put a lot of money in, but come check us out and maybe get involved in the community, especially if you're listening to the show, you are kind of community. So, get involved. There's a ton of different ways to participate. You don't have to be a developer. You could just set up meetup groups. You can just, come up with, micro marketing campaigns, whatever it is that, if you're a graphic designer, please just come check it out. And if you believe in the same mission than we do, come be part of that.
Tell me about, I was looking at my notes here. Tell me about the wallets. So obviously you've got your full node that eventually, or I guess has the secure node option now for those that want to go all the way and go all in. But what about lesser wallets, mobile wallets? What is out there for that is compatible with Zencash? I know Coinomi has it.
Yep. So we're on Coinomi for a mobile wallet. We also have our own native mobile wallet.
You do?
That's
okay.
It's on the Android or Google Play Store.
And what's that one called?
Just Zen Mobile Wallet.
Zen Mobile Wallet. Okay.
yeah. And we have a light client for your desktop called Arisen.
Okay.
So this does not run a full node. So you're not going to be able to do the Snark based transactions or messaging. But it's a nice, easy way for people that just want to store some Zen with a better, user interface. We have a paper wallet, which I think is great for keeping some money in cold storage. We have an online wallet for people. It just wants something really simple, nice interface online. And we actually have one major wallet design project right now in the works with the team that we're trying to tackle the new user market. And right now, I'll be very honest to say our wallets are not, amazing applications that you're going to see like a teenager, downloading and playing with in high school or something like that. What we wanted to do was we had our first technical wallet, our command line wallet, and then we have two graphical user interface wallets for kind of the next level of user. And now we're working on like the brand new user to crypto. So everything in this is going to be super user friendly, super nice graphical interface. So that's kind of an exciting project that we're working right now.
Do you have a handy list of places one could go if one had Bitcoin and or some other crypto and they wanted to trade it for Zencash? What exchanges is it available on, or the Shapeshift, Changely places? Where can one acquire it?
Yeah, I'll say my favorite is with a Shapeshift like exchange called evercoin.com.
Okay.
Now these guys are Silicon Valley startup, and they were big Zen supporters from the beginning. I love their interface. Is just really nice and user friendly. So it's the same concept of Shapeshift. You don't need an account. You can just send Bitcoin or Monero or some other cryptocurrency and get Zen directly.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also treated. Our biggest exchange right now is Bittrex. So if you're a hardcore, if you're a hardcore trader, you want the best prices and you want to trade, go to Bittrex.
Cool.
We're on a bunch of others.
And the acronym or call sign or whatever ticker symbol is ZEN, Z-E-N?
Correct. Yeah. I think it's the best ticker symbol out there.
It's very good. Robert, I got to say, I learned a thing or two here. I appreciate it. The white paper, of course, very detailed. But as you said, you guys are going to be updating some of the details in there. So listeners should stay tuned. ZenSystem.io. What are some of the community options? You did mention there was a community. Where would one find that?
Definitely. So our community's migrated over to Discord. We were using Slack, but we've already exceeded the user amounts on there. So, yeah, so now Discord's our new thing. So definitely check us out there. And for the privacy-oriented people, we have a really vibrant Telegram channel. So I would check out our Telegram and our Discord. And, of course, we have a forum, Reddit, Twitter, all the usual suspects.
Okay. And is all that linked over at zensystem.io?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Excellent. One of the founders of Zencash, he's Robert Viglione. Thank you for coming on Free Talk Live. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me.
Have a great day.
Have a good day. You too. Bye.
Do you want to help build a better financial system for everyone? Join Dash. Dash is digital cash, a digital money platform designed to replace cash and help people manage their own wealth. It's fast and easy. Fees are low and transactions are confirmed instantly. Dash is decentralized, run by users who earn rewards for helping run the network and make governance decisions. Help people take control over their financial future today. Find out more at dash.org.